I heard you're training with Kobayashi, the competitive eater. You know what I'm saying, for this?
Who?
Kobayashi, the hot dog eater.
253 for Rampage Jackson.
Daniel has been in wars. There's only so much your body can take. You know what I mean? And Daniel's not getting any younger.
You know how he's bullying me now? In the octagon, I do the bullying. And that's what happened in the first fight.
Listen, I'll tell you right now. Musashi beat Chris Weidman. That's why I'm saying I don't think it's a smart fight.
Rafael Carvalho versus Melvin Manhoff. I have to say, the worst decision I have ever seen.
It was questionable whether Shawn Michaels was going to do the right thing or not. I'll just put it this way. If it hadn't have been done the way it was done, it would have been a very, probably been a very long night for Shawn Michaels.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, now you're back.
Okay, is that too much?
Bring it down a little bit.
How about now?
Yeah, that'll work.
Okay.
I'm watching Wheel of Fortune.
That's an interesting choice.
I love Wheel of Fortune. I'm just obsessed with it.
Why?
I think it's like this window into this part of the world, or like these people that are like just really nice and normal, and like everyone's happy, and like they're more excited to get a trip to Disneyland than I would be to win the lottery. They're just these nice people, and they're all happy, and the game is so simple, and it's never changed. It's still Vanna, it's still whatever his name is, and I don't know, it's just hilarious and great in its own way.
I like when there's always like bloopers of the bloopers that are the best are with Family Feud. Have you ever seen those? They put some like compilations together where people just are like name a animal with three letters in the name, and they're like alligator.
Yeah.
Just like they freak out under the pressure, and those are good. Wheel of Fortune doesn't seem to have as many fun moments like that, though.
No, there was one like kind of hit virally about 2 weeks ago. Bring your levels down a little bit. You're a little loud. And like the guy totally biffed one. It was like a real, real bad miss. Like, where on earth did you come up with that one? But I don't know. Just something about the show. It's I don't know. Like I watch it a lot now because just the way my schedule's lined up, and it's just so easy and stupid to watch. Like, you don't have to really pay attention, and if you lose, I don't know, you're losing a, you know, fucking morons. Like, the show is just filled with the most stereotypical Midwesterners. Like, everyone on this show is from Iowa or Minnesota or something. It's just like, and they're all, like, grandparents, and they're all just, I have seven grandchildren, and I'm a hands-on grandma, and I can't wait to bring home some money. And I'm like, what the fuck is with, there's no snark or anything. It's so refreshing.
It's kind of like The Price is Right. I feel like it's the same. Like
it's the exact same people. Game. I think they just wheel those people around. They're all the exact same. You look at them, you go, you put effort into that T-shirt, and it's all blingy, and wow, good for you.
Yeah. Anyway.
I've had a fucked up day. I was in the car for 3 hours this afternoon.
How come?
I had to pick my mom up from the airport, and she arrived at rush hour in the rain in Chicago.
Is she coming back from Washington, D.C.?
No, from South Dakota.
Ooh.
That's where she.
I hear South Dakota's nice this time of year.
It's actually not bad, apparently, from what she said. So.
Oh, it's North Dakota that's bad.
Yeah. Huge difference there. Huge.
That Bismarck. Ugh.
Yes.
It's the capital.
I get what you're going for. I'm just, all right. Usually people say Fargo.
Good movie.
Really good TV show.
Haven't seen it, shockingly.
The second season. Yeah, you guys kids. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, that's tough. I can barely watch all this wrestling and MMA anyway. So welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. I'm Matt. That's Mike. You know the drill at this point. This past weekend, on Friday night, March 31st, at the Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois, we had Bellator 175. You were not in attendance. You told me you were going to be there, but then you changed your mind.
Yes, I did, and boy, did I make the right decision. And it was for exactly that reason. Like, I looked ahead. I'm like, nope, I don't want to be there at 10:30 or whatever when this shit ends. I ain't going to this crap fest.
Have you gone to many Bellator shows?
No, I haven't, actually. This, I think, would have been my first.
Really?
Because they've only run the Chicago area like one other time, I think.
Okay.
They don't come here a lot at all. They're a very coastal promotion, it seems.
Unless they're in Thackerville.
Well, you got to hit Thackerville. I mean, they're not crazy. There's a fucking booming market of fight fans in Thackerville. I mean, the money is just rolling in Thackerville.
So, in the main event, we had King Mo defeating Rampage Jackson by unanimous decision, 29-28 on all three cards. This was a rematch of their May 2014 fight, which was actually on pay-per-view, believe it or not. Rampage won that first one by decision, so now we've got, you know, two decision wins, one for each of them. Their first fight was pretty boring, and so was this one. If you miss this fight, you're not really missing out at all. Probably the biggest difference between the two fights was how much Rampage weighed for both fights. The first fight in 2014 was at light heavyweight, so both guys weighed whatever, 205.
I thought he may have weighed like 220 for that.
No, I think you're thinking of the Ishii fight.
Yeah.
He made 205 for the first one, and then he missed weight with Bader too. But anyway, Mo weighed in at 213 for this, and Rampage weighed in at 253, which is a 40-pound difference, which is bigger than you'll see like in any fight, unless it's like Gabby Garcia or something. The fight did good numbers, though, peaking at 1.6 million viewers for Spike, which is decent for Bellator. That's probably like double their average. Usually they're 800,000-900,000 for their standard show, so good numbers-wise, so there's still some drawing power for Rampage left, even though he doesn't seem to care about fighting anymore, he doesn't really promote these fights, there's still people who want to see him fight. He's got that drawing power from, you know, 10 years ago when he knocked out Liddell, I guess. What's interesting, though, is Rampage won this fight, but his deal with Bellator is up, and he, like, legally has to go back to UFC, I guess, for his next couple fights, because he still has that UFC deal. His whole contract got weird, if you remember back. He was fighting for Bellator, then he said his deal with Bellator was canceled, and he had that one fight in UFC, I think, against Fabio Maldonado. Then a judge ruled in favor of Bellator, then he's back in Bellator, but he has that UFC deal he signed when he fought Maldonado that he still, I guess, has to fulfill, is kind of the vibe I got from everything. So a weird situation there for Rampage.
That doesn't sound right to me. I feel like that contract would have been nullified.
I don't know. He's claiming he's going to go back to UFC.
Yeah, he says a lot.
He says a lot of stuff, I know.
This is a guy who hypes up his fights by coming in 50 pounds over his real fighting weight and spending all week going, I really wish I didn't get into this sport. Like, it's the most amazing example of I don't give a fuck about this that I've ever seen. I mean, what's really sad is that if this was like pride scoring, Rampage would have won this fight because he's the only one that did any actual damage. King Mo just humped him for, you know, parts of two rounds, and holy shit, it was exactly what I thought it would be, and it was terrible, but I was entertained in a perverse way, and it all came down to just seeing what the hell is going to happen with Rampage here. And when he weighed in at 253, I'm just like, holy shit. He's really, like, he's not even making the effort to pretend. Like, he's somebody who's like, I just got out of the shower, and he wouldn't even put, like, water on his head. He's just, it's embarrassed. That's a really shit analogy. But, that's what a big fat ass is what he is. I love it. I want to go up to the UFC and fight a heavyweight. Just go for it. Be the bigger man.
I mean, he probably will. I don't think he wants to put the work in to lose that 50 pounds and get down to 205. And would UFC let him fight at heavyweight right now? Hell yeah, they would. It's not like heavyweight division stacked. I mean,
Andre Arlovsky's still in the top 10.
I wouldn't be surprised if Rampage could knock Arlovsky out.
Oh, I could
see
it.
I mean, Like, he could win a couple fights at heavyweight. It's not that ridiculous based on the top 10 heavyweights and their ages. Like, Rampage is young compared to some of those guys.
I mean, fucking just putting on 50 pounds and fighting a heavyweight, that's what Overeem did.
Yeah, but that was a different kind of 50 pounds.
Yeah, well, we don't all have access to horses.
You don't think Rampage was eating horse meat?
I'm surprised if he ate anything above, like, grade D rat meat in, like, a Taco Bell or a McDonald's meal or something.
Fair enough. Then, as far as our friend King Mo goes, he was announced immediately after this fight. Apparently, they already had this fight signed no matter what happened. King Mo is going to face Ryan Bader at the MSG show this summer. Thoughts on that one?
I turned the show off before that happened. I was not aware of that fight taking place until just now, which means
breaking news.
Which means nobody gives a shit about Bellator. It's actually I put that fight on Madison Square Garden for sure. Why not? It adds depth and it's a win-win if you're Bellator. I mean, except for the fight's gonna probably suck, but the outcome is a win-win.
I think it's actually gonna be on Spike. I think it's like the main event of the prelims. So. It's a good idea. It's two name guys, not huge names, but for Bellator, definitely they're upper tier stars. I don't like it for King Mo, though. I feel like Bader's so much bigger, and I don't know if his wrestling's better, but King Mo with those bad knees and everything, I just feel like Bader's the bigger, stronger fighter.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, King Mo barely beat Fat Rampage. Like, if he fights an actual fighter... King Mo sucks anyways. I think he's the most overrated guy in the history of the sport. It's just, he's never done shit.
Only a couple months ago that Crow Cop knocked him out.
Yeah, like, he's never done shit. He's never really accomplished anything other than just winning some fights here and there and talking the talk, but he's just a piece of shit. I don't care about King Mo. Fuck him.
In the semi-main event, Manny Sanchez beat Marcos Galvao by unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three scorecards. It was a decent win for Sanchez, but he did miss weight by 3 pounds prior to the fight, and he also beat a guy who typically fights at bantamweight. Were you impressed with his performance?
Yeah, I mean, it sucked that he missed weight. Galvao is coming up, but he's a former champion at bantamweight. So, you know, when a championship level guy comes up to the next division, I don't think, you know, him getting beat is a cakewalk. I mean, you know, Demetrius Johnson was basically beating everybody but Dominic Cruz, and Jose Aldo would probably do fine at 155 and so on. But I mean, look, Manny went out there and he looked really, really good against probably a world-class type of guy, and Manny's looked pretty good in most of his fights. His losses are usually pretty close. And more importantly than anything is that he didn't fight like the big guy. He was on his toes a lot. He moved in and out. He was actually quicker than Galvao. So, yeah, good for Manny. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's a guy kind of similar to your weight, and he's got a big name for Bellator, so easily the highlight of his career, I'm sure, even though he also is fat.
Yeah, I mean, Manny, looking at his record, he's 6-2 in Bellator, which is good. It's nothing to sneeze at, but at the same time, it's like every single one of his wins has been by decision, and three of them have been by split decision. So he's putting some wear and tear on his body against guys who Henry Corrales, Alejandro Villalobos, guys you've never even really heard of. You'd like to see him get some finishes here at some point, because every single fight he's had in Bellator has gone to a decision, yeah. Even his two losses.
He lacks the power in his strikes, and his ground game, he works a lot at it, but it's good, but it isn't dangerous. And, yeah, frankly, in Bellator, he needs to be able to start putting together some really dominant wins or finishes if I think that he's going to be, you know, a next-level guy. I think he's good enough for... you know, UFC on certain shows, but is he going to be, you know, Eddie Alvarez type where he crosses over and can hang at the top level? He's young, but he's really at that do or die point, blah, where he's got like maybe the next 24 months kind of determine if he becomes huge or if he's just, you know, very good but never great.
Also on the show, we had Sergey Karatanov defeating Chase Gormley by knockout. Good win for Karatanov coming off that knockout loss he had where he just got basically destroyed. So good comeback for an older guy, pride guy. Not sure where he goes from here with, you know, Fedor and Mitrione and Lashley and all those guys at heavyweight. But good win for him, and he's probably back in the mix for if they ever decide to make another heavyweight champion in Bellator.
I think it's a pretty safe bet that a guy coming off a win at heavyweight is in the mix for their title, you know, if they ever have it again. So, yeah.
Good analysis there.
No, it says it's good analysis. It's more like, what the fuck is Bellator doing? Why do you have, they're not even like close to a champion.
Anything else on that show catch your eye?
No. I'm not even remembering anything, so it couldn't have been very good.
All right. I just like that there's a guy named Jake Roberts on the show. Ronda Rousey's back in the news. She got some publicity this week. She is reported to be working with a new strength and nutrition coach named Dan Garner. Some footage also came out of her doing some judo training. Could Rousey be considering a return to the UFC, or is this all just wishful thinking?
I'm sure she's thinking about it. I don't know why she wouldn't. She's been an athlete longer than she's been anything, except for alive, I guess. Female. And, okay, you can break down some more subcategories like that. But, you know, even if she doesn't fight again, you know, you do something like judo for as long as she did, she's never going to stop. She's always going to want to be rolling or something. And I think doing these things in public is good for her image. That's her claim to fame in Hollywood is, you know, do these things so you get your photo op and reminds the agents and casting directors, oh, yeah, she's a real badass, because the last time anybody saw her, she was just getting the fuck knocked out of her like Christy Mack.
I mean, to me, the one, there's two fights you can make for Rousey if she does come back. One is Gina Carano, and the other is Miesha Tate.
Those are Cyborg.
That fight doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless you want Cyborg to be your next big star, which...
I think that's what it would be. Look, the fight's got a name, and if Rousey wins, that's a feather in her cap, and if Cyborg wins, you know, it just helps her. So, I mean, it's probably more likely than Gina, sadly.
Yeah, probably, but I don't know if Ronda would come back for the Cyborg fight after how she's been knocked out the last two fights.
I doubt it, but who knows? I
mean, to me, if she's going to take a fight, she should probably take one she thought she could win and make decent money. The Tate fight would draw and Carano would draw. Would they draw as well as Cyborg? Probably not. But the risk-reward ratio there is not even close. Well,
Carano would draw. I think that's the best fight she could ever make. I think that would be actually probably one of the five biggest pay-per-views in MMA history. I think that fight could just be fucking insane. And if they wanted to do a wild card, you put that one on free TV, that could, you know, be one of those game-changer kind of moments people remember in the history of the sport, because that thing would just be enormous.
Yeah. So time will tell with Ronda, obviously, but people were like, ooh, she's getting back into it. Who knows? Another guy who you can never figure out, another person you can't figure out is Jason Miller. It came out today.
Whether he's a man or not?
No, I went from Rousey. Oh. No, I went to Rousey to Jason Miller, and I said another guy.
Oh, okay, I see.
Rousey's technically a woman.
Probably more than just technically.
I don't have evidence one way or the other, but
I do.
I trust the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
They do a vagina check. ever since Fallon Fox, part of the pre-screen physical with the doctors is they also make you do the old squat and cough like you're in prison.
Okay. Yeah. I was unaware, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could have a weapon out there.
Jason Miller will not have
knuckles.
He's not going to have to spend any further time in jail after pleading guilty to several charges in a string of incidents in Orange County, California. I think both you and I love stories like this. So in a plea bargain, he pleaded guilty to a range of felony and misdemeanor charges based on multiple incidents from 2014 to 2016. The judge sentenced Miller to 3 years probation and 100 days in jail, then gave Miller double credit for his 50 days already served, meaning Miller walked out of the courtroom a free man. The incidents for which Miller was given a range of charges included an October 2014 incident in which he barricaded himself into his home and live-tweeted while authorities attempted to serve him an arrest warrant, a 2015 incident in Laguna Beach in which he allegedly kicked and spat at police officers, and another spitting incident with police in Costa Mesa last year. In February, Miller was acquitted of felony domestic violence charges stemming from a 2013 incident in which he was accused of assaulting his ex-girlfriend in Mission Viejo. Miller says, "I take responsibility for my stupidity. You can't rough up the police with no consequences."
Oh, I'm... Look, I got it.
I have a couple questions.
Well, I'm not going to pretend that the listenership of this show is super diverse. However, I have to apologize for every black person in America right now. Black people barely look at a cop the wrong way and get shot. Jason Miller, they get justifiably shot, they say. Jason Miller fought the cops three times and he's not even going to go to jail for it.
This doesn't even include that stuff with the church. Remember he, like, destroyed a church? He was naked running around in a church and, like, destroyed the church?
And, I mean, I know that he prison's not the right place for him. He should be getting mental health help and all this stuff, but, like, look at all this shit. Like, I don't know what you have to do to get put in jail if you're somebody like Jason Miller. He's clearly unstable and a danger to society, but, you know, he's white, so it's fine. We are so fucked as a country.
Yeah, I don't know how you... I mean, do you think... I mean, like, does it help?
Do you think there's any black guy in the hood that when the cops show up and he spits
no,
and bites
no, not
him,
at all. I don't argue that at all. But do you think, like, Miller, his celebrity, how fleeting and small it might be, on top of him possibly having a good lawyer and some money still, does that help his case? Would... If it's just, you know, a white guy... poor guy doing this stuff with no fame and no money and, you know, the public defendant, is he going to get off like this or is he going to spend some time behind bars?
Honestly, when you really look at it, like, he shouldn't be in prison. Nobody should for what he did. To me, if you fight the cops, you should never get in trouble. They're cops. That's part of the job. It's not like I beat up a civilian. You're a cop. If I beat you up, you're bad at your job. I should get credit for weeding you out of the system. But, you know, again, he's got real... He needs help. He doesn't need to go to jail and be in prison with prisoners like war machine. The guy is boarding himself into rooms and doing all this weird shit. Like, he needs help.
Right, but is that part... Like, can they sentence him... I guess sentence isn't the right word, but force him to do that sort of thing? Because it doesn't read like that's what happened at all.
No, a judge can do that. A judge can make a condition of your probation that you attend counseling and things like that. He's probably got something like that. But the real reason he's not going to jail is he didn't really do anything that bad, and he's in California. They're looking for any excuse in the world to not put somebody in jail. They are so overcrowded. So if they have a chance to keep some guy out, yeah, they're just going to do it.
Okay. Well, there you go. Another human in the news is Sage Northcutt.
He's a dog. He's a golden retriever.
I knew that was coming. You're going to like this story, too, I think. Not sure if you've heard about this, but he was hoping to fight at UFC 211 in Dallas. He grew up in Texas and lives there now. But he's not going to be able to. Do you have any guess as to why he can't fight at UFC 211?
Is he going to the prom? Oh, do you have to maybe be 21 in Texas or something? I don't know.
No, I mean, you can fight on methadone in Texas. There's no rules there.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He has had several bouts of strep throat and will now need to get his tonsils removed. So he will be out of action until July.
He's fucking 4 years old.
like, it's the classic, like, it's the perfect Sage Northcutt story. He gets strep throat like a little kid and has to get his tonsils removed like Cindy Brady. It's like, what is going on with him? Like, perfect story.
On the one hand, he was really sad when he heard this news because he really wanted to fight in Dallas. But then they reminded him that he's going to get all the ice cream he can eat. And he was really happy then.
Well, his dad talked about what his diet. His dad was the one that gave this interview and put the info out there, shockingly. And his dad was saying something like, oh, yeah, he can only drink the first 2 weeks. Then he can start having some soft foods in the third and fourth weeks. Then after the fourth, sixth week, he can start eating normal food and start training again. I'm like, why is your dad out there publicizing this? Like, literally, like, you're a little kid. Like, you're talking to the teacher at the school or something.
Writing notes.
It's so bizarre.
Dear Mrs. Johnson, yes, Sage really is sick. He had his tonsils out. Here's a doctor's note.
Yeah, no, dear Dana and Sean Shelby would be the note.
Oh,
sorry, Sage won't be at UFC 211. He hasn't been feeling well and has to get his tonsils removed.
You know, what's really sad is, like, I didn't have my tonsils removed, so in theory it could probably happen to me. But sure.
I don't think it's that common anymore. I think that's kind of old school. I don't think most people get their tonsils removed anymore.
I hope not, because it does seem kind of like, well, this thing keeps getting sick. What would you do? Just cut it off. No, how about you just, I only have so many body parts. Don't start hacking them away just because, it's fucking easier this way.
Yeah, okay. I think if you get, like, strep a lot, sometimes stuff can get, like, I don't want to say caught in there, but it can attract bacteria and stuff. So certain people have to get them removed, but it's nowhere near as common as it was, you know, 30, 40 years ago.
I don't need facts getting in the way of my bit, all right? Like, I'm just going with this shit. He's a little boy or a golden retriever, and
golden retrievers do not get their tonsils removed. I've never heard of that.
Have you ever asked one?
No.
There you go. Don't jump to conclusions like that. I don't know if Puggles I don't even know what that thing does. I don't know what tonsils do.
I don't know either. I think that's why you can get them removed and it doesn't really matter.
It's like the fucking appendix. We keep having, like, body parts that apparently we don't need.
I bet we needed them, like, thousands of years ago. I bet they served a purpose.
Yeah, well, we had tails then, too. I don't have a tail anymore.
True.
Evolution.
Speaking of evolution, USADA announced today that undefeated heavyweight prospect Justin Ledet has accepted a 4-month anti-doping suspension after testing positive for a banned substance due to a contaminated supplement. Ledet tested positive for a metabolite of 1 testosterone and 1 androstenedione in an out-of-competition drug test from a sample collected on January 12th. Subsequent testing of the supplement declared by Ledet in his sample collection paperwork at a WADA-accredited lab in Salt Lake City discovered the presence of banned anabolic agents in the product, which has since been added to USADA's list of high-risk supplements. Ledet's suspension is retroactive to February 1st, meaning he will be cleared to compete in June. So I guess this is another case where, obviously, it's a tainted supplement. He declared it in his paperwork. He tested positive. They tested the supplement. The same stuff was in the supplement he put on his paperwork. The thing that gets me here, though, is that it's a 4-month suspension now, which I don't think has ever happened as far as a USADA punishment, from what I remember. No, it's 4 months. He's accepted a 4-month anti-doping suspension.
I thought he got popped in February and just got heard now, and they're giving him time. Whatever. It's USADA. They're just making shit up again. Now we're down from 2 years to 1 year to 6 months to 4 months. Like, they're just coming up with, they didn't do anything fucking wrong. The dude took something that he could buy over the counter, told you he was taking it, it's not like he's hiding it, and then you go, oh shit, that is bad. And you can't use that. Now, what? You don't get to do that. If you find a loophole, you don't get punished for it. Fucking assholes.
Well, still the weirdest one I don't get is Machida. Machida wrote the supplement down, tested positive. I think they tested it or whatever. He didn't even test positive, I don't think.
He
got 18 months.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And 18, this guy gets 4 months. Like,
18, of course.
Just,
well, They got it. They're probably taking all of them together and trying to bring them so they average out to 2 years or whatever. So some guys get four, some guys get 18. They got to, you fudge the numbers a little bit.
Yes. But yeah, just another one where you wonder where they, how they arrive at that number and why 4 months. Because basically, Ledet probably wouldn't have fought in 4 months anyway. It's not even really a suspension.
That's why I'm thinking, in my mind, it was started in February.
It says that it's retroactive from February 1st, which means he can fight in June.
Okay, so that's, well, that could be all of February, March, April, May. You could be 4.5, 5 months.
Could be. If he doesn't fight on June 1st, yes.
Yeah, so, like, it could be, I don't know. I can only get to 5 months of this shit. At least that's more than USADA does, I guess. I don't know. It's so stupid. Like, apparently, you know what I never hear? It would be really interesting if this ever happened. All these guys are getting popped for these tainted supplements. How come you never hear about all these supplement companies getting arrested for putting illegal drugs into their supplements over the counter? This is a hugely dangerous thing. You can't just...
Well, is all the stuff technically illegal, or is it just banned by WADA?
Well, some of it's banned by WADA, but...
Do you know what I mean, though?
Yeah, but, like, somehow these supplements have... Like, people will take a supplement, and then there's something else in that supplement than what was on the label, and that supplement is apparently... You know, whatever is extra in there is... It can affect the body enough that WADA won't let you use it in competition. So it must be something. Even if it's minor, it's still something. And these companies, you know, Isopro or whatever, they're just putting this shit in there? Like, I know that it's an unregulated industry, but how the fuck aren't people getting in major trouble for hurting someone? Unless all this stuff is pointless, in which case, why is it banned?
Yeah, I mean... Leeming Good was also served with a 6-month suspension for a tainted supplement earlier in the week. That was going to be my USADA story, but 6 months seemed to make more sense to me than 4 months for whatever reason. So I wasn't even going to bring that up. But that's just one more of these tainted supplement cases. And I mean, in the back of my mind, I've kind of thought about this, and I've read a couple articles now too. Could a UFC fighter sue these companies that are putting out these supplements with tainted products?
I think so. It's the same thing. Like, it's kind of what I was just saying. Like, if you got really sick from this, which could happen because people, you know, if you're taking some medication, could respond negatively to an anabolic agent. Somebody could get really hurt. Like, again, unless the shit just doesn't have anything in it except for sugar, which wouldn't surprise me. But I don't know. It's kind of fucked up. This is out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's funny. A couple years ago, I shouldn't say you, but most people made fun of the tainted supplement excuse. Cause it
oh,
just
yeah. Totally, I always been making fun of it.
Yes. And more and more, it seems like it's a legit thing.
It's either legit or USADA is just really, really lazy.
Or gullible, yeah.
Which I think it's just... You know what I really think it is? I think, you know, back then the tainted supplement was kind of bullshit. I have a feeling that what's really happening now is that the supplements probably aren't any more tainted so much as the testing is so much better. I think that's
right.
why you've seen a lot of people get popped for stuff. Like, nobody's really sure of the half-life of these things, and they're just putting so much energy and money into it. I'm done talking. You get the point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. That's totally, totally plausible. And I mean, for the supplement companies, the stuff I've read on it essentially says the first few batches, they might doctor them up a little bit and put something a little extra in there they don't really want, that isn't technically legal, I guess. And then people are like, oh, this works great. And then, 6 months down the road, they'll pull it unbeknownst to anybody. And obviously your gains or whatever won't be the same, but it's already got this rep that it's developed in the previous few months where this shit's like amazing. So
pretty fucking crazy.
I agree.
Just flooded, like, they're like intentionally tainting things. Like, every other company in the world has like 13 layers of security to show you this has never been opened. This has never been used. And meanwhile, they're like, no, fuck it. We tainted the shit out of this. Like, if you did that with Tylenol, can you imagine if there was any hint that Tylenol would be bad? I mean, Chicago had the killer, the deaths from Tylenol poisoning in the 80s. Now Tylenol has cotton swabs and this kind of cap and this tinfoil thingy and something else. And then if you literally have a cotton swab, tinfoil, you have the cap that has a childproof thing and a little plastic thingy on top of it. They're so scared of contamination. And again, IcoPro is just like, dude, shoot some into that batch, right? They just spray it. I don't know. Just like a little. I don't know. Just do three Mississippis. Just go for it. All right. We're just gonna throw it out there. No one's gonna care. It's gonna be great. That's what they're doing. This is insane.
I'm probably opening a can of worms with this question, but do you think it should be something that's inspected by like the FDA? All these supplements, or
I don't,
because basically it's unregulated. Is how I understand it.
To me, it's one of those things where it's unregulated, and the reason it's basically unregulated is it doesn't work. Like, it's kind of like they get put in a category along with, like, you know, herbs and shit like that. And, yeah, that makes sense. Like, if somebody's just buying, I was going to say thyme, you know, some herb that, ginseng, that's a thing, yeah. If somebody's just buying ginseng, it doesn't necessarily need to be regulated, because it's, you know, you don't regulate, you know, if somebody's buying lettuce, like you have a health inspection type of things.
But, right. That's what I'm referring to.
I mean, there could be something, but then you're getting closer should have to have FDA approval, and that'll never come. These guys have so much money they're just pumping to these congressmen. And so, like, I don't like the inconsistency. Either this stuff should be regulated, or we should stop regulating other things. But I don't differentiate between this and, I'll say, Tylenol.
Right. I mean, if it's something you're putting into your body, I'm okay with somebody checking on that. You know what I mean? Whether it's the USDA or the FDA or whatever, I mean, that's what those are there for. But I wonder why they haven't really meddled in it yet. There's got to be a reason.
Just money.
Yes, but...
because they haven't been regulated, and since, let's face it, it's not really part of the mainstream world. Mm-hmm. Like, it is kind of, but the stuff that like needs a regulation is bodybuilding shit, and there ain't a lot of people in that. And I think that a lot of people also look at it somewhat justifiably as anybody that gets sick from this stuff. Well, we all know that it's not good. Like, nobody really, if you get hurt from this, we all know it's horse shit. And so if you're kind of in that way, the market's working, if you will, because, you know, I'm not going to go to fucking, whatever, the weight gainer 5,000. I'm not putting that in my body. I don't know what the hell that is. I'll eat like, you know, Oreos, and I don't think there's anything in an Oreo that's actually, like, natural to this planet. And I'll eat that because at least I trust Nabisco. I trust Nabisco and their white cream way more than I do, you know, the guy who is purposely wearing a extra small t-shirt, even though he's 220 pounds, and he's just flaring out his guns. Hey, bro, you want to make some gains? And it's like, no, I'm not going to. Why would I listen to you about what's going to help my body? You literally are in junior college for your fifth year in a row. I don't care what you have to say to me. Go lift some weights, you meathead motherfucker.
Speaking of meathead motherfuckers, the UFC is headed to Nassau Coliseum in Long Island for UFC on UFC on Fox 25 on July 22nd. So UFC is really making good on their promise to run several shows a year in New York State. They're going to Buffalo this weekend. They've done Albany. They've done New York City, I guess Manhattan technically, and Brooklyn. They've been all over the state. Are you surprised they're running this many shows in New York, or is this about what you thought would happen?
I had never really given it a lot of thought, because that really did come together really quick, because they signed that into law in March of last year,
right?
And then they had a show already in November. Like, that was really quick. Like, it hadn't really occurred to me, but it's an area that's been starved forever. It's also the biggest market in the United States, if not the world. And if they think,
but Buffalo, though, I mean, is Buffalo really a big market?
No, but everything,
especially in early April. I mean, I don't know.
I don't really know, but I think Buffalo also gets in a lot of Toronto.
Okay.
Because they're really close to each other.
And if those Canadians can get over the border, maybe.
Well, we are trying to keep out foreigners these days, so maybe that's why they're doing Buffalo early in Trump's term here.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe they have some insider information. Dana and Trump are good buddies.
Hey, there's a lot of fucking non-whiteys up there in Canada, all right? They're all coming over from Asia. We're going to put a stop to that real quick. We've already mostly lost Seattle. We're not giving up the rest of the Pacific Northwest.
It's all North Koreans now.
That'd be a really weird group of people to come across. Who are your legal immigrants? Are they Mexicans, El Salvadorians? No, they're North Koreans. Like, they literally get murdered if they get caught.
We never talked about that, the brother there of Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, we did.
Did we, at the airport, we talked about that?
Yeah, I think we did. I talked to my mom about it. Didn't we talk about how
I like how me and your mom are on the same level. That's good.
I don't talk to a lot of people.
She should take that as a compliment.
She doesn't. She doesn't want to talk. She's so sick of me. Didn't we talk about how, like, the woman that poisoned the brother thought she was on a reality TV show?
Yeah, I maybe we talked about it, but I don't know if we ever talked about it on a show.
I don't know. I think that's just hilarious that was the case.
That story is fucking crazy. That's, like, the craziest story ever, pretty much.
When you hear shit like that, anytime something like that actually comes down for real, that's when you've got to realize anybody thinks, oh, we can negotiate with North Korea. Really? This dude had his brother killed when his brother was living in Singapore, and he tricked a woman into thinking she's on a game show in order to do it. This is an Austin Powers villain. Dude, you can't reason with this. Dude, you can't negotiate with him. He's not even like Osama bin Laden crazy. Or at least he's crazy, but his brain is, like, there's some rationality, like, he can follow a train of thought. Kim Jong-un is just, again, this is cartoon character behavior. He's probably painting, open, like, train tracks and stuff into the size of mountains to kill people. It's just ridiculous.
I don't understand what kind of game show you would be on where you run up to someone in an airport and put a rag over their mouth. It's the weirdest game show I've ever heard of.
Like, reality
show. That's way
show.
Different than Wheel of Fortune.
Well, there you go. Look, they're fucking Asian, dude. Have you seen Japan? You think that Japan does not have, like, a how many people can you kidnap in half an hour in a mall or something?
What was that show on Spike that was dubbed where they would fall
Most
and run on...
Elimination Challenge.
That, did you like that?
I loved that show.
Me too. Okay.
I hated when they redid it here in America and all that, because the original one was sucked. So awesome. The comedians were great. Kenny Blankenship.
Yeah. I love that show, too.
I was actually just reading about it, like, a couple weeks ago. Huh. The original show aired on NHK and TBS in Japan from, like, the mid, like, 86 to 89 or something.
Was it that old? Okay.
Yeah, it was way older than I thought, and they actually had, like, recurring characters, and it was really great.
The good old days. In upcoming fight news, we've got Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone going down at UFC 213 in July. This is a fight that was originally supposed to happen at UFC 205, but Lawler said he needed more time off. Then Cerrone was going to fight Gastelum, and Gastelum couldn't make weight, and Cerrone was off 205. Since then, Cerrone lost to Jorge Masvidal, who has been talking badly about George St. Pierre recently, but we'll get to that in a minute. This is really a dream fight for me and probably a lot of hardcore MMA fans, I'm guessing.
Not me.
You don't want to see Robbie Lawler versus Donald Cerrone. That doesn't interest you.
Never once occurred to me. I think it's garbage. It's just two brutes slugging it out. Oh, I can't stand it. Give me a Rampage and King Mo battle any day where men are they're battling with their wits. That's what the sport's really about. Wits.
They haven't talked much about International Fight Week yet, but it can be presumed that this will be the Saturday show over that weekend where they run two or three shows. And obviously this will probably be part of the main card of UFC 213. It'll be interesting to see how things shake out with Jon Jones and everything else. But
I hope it's not.
You hope it's not. What do you hope this is?
I hope that UFC 213 is so deep, this is not on the pay-per-view.
That would be nice.
Like, it's not going to happen. Because already, like, it's a semi-main event. This is awesome for any show. Like, it's fucking great. If you're into that kind of slugfest stuff. And, broke character. I think that, yeah, but it is interesting. You said, you know, they haven't really talked at all about July. And yeah, it's only just April now. And I think that really just comes down to what Bisping has been bitching about is St. Pierre hasn't signed that deal yet. Like, he's talked about it, he's announced it, but I don't know what's the holdup. Like, that's the only time that matters, the only time that makes sense. I don't know. St. Pierre doesn't need any more time to prepare. He's had 3 years. Let's get rid of
St. Pierre's a weird dude, man. I feel like he's got, not OCD, but a little, like, everything's going to be just right and so perfect, or he's not going to do it. You know what I mean?
He's got OCD for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we have to really be careful because we can never, as a society and as fight fans in particular, we have to make sure that we never let George St. Pierre listen to Alex Jones. He will never come out of his house ever again.
Maybe not. Do you see what Masvidal was saying, that he thinks Bisping will win the fight because GSP won't look the same because of USADA testing?
That was great. I'm so happy he said that.
Obviously, Masvidal's trying to make a name for himself now by challenging Dana White to find a fighter who can beat him for $200,000, and he's claiming that he's the hired assassin to take out Damian Maia, although any sane person probably sees it the opposite way, where Maya's probably there to take out Masvidal. But either way, he's been making some noise and trying to, you know, step up a level. He's got that Cerrone knockout win. He's looked good lately. Now he's talking shit about GSP, this guy who's for years and years wanted stricter testing. He wanted to do independent testing with the Johnny Hendricks fight. He claims he wasn't coming back to the UFC until they cleaned it up, and the company is a joke, and they don't care about the fighters. This was all stuff St. Pierre was saying, and Masvidal's basically calling him out, saying it's bullshit, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, obviously St. Pierre's never failed anything. He's never been even close to failing. The only hints that have ever been whispered about him are the fact that he looks the way he does, and it's one of those things where I look at him, and I'm like, are you really... Like, do you look like that? You think you're, I think, supposed to think you're natural, but there's always going to be that one guy that does look like that when he's natural, and that's St. Pierre, you know, for basically about 48 hours when he looks like that. So he's probably a little softer otherwise. But I've always thought, just come on, dude, like, you're like, fucking Roger Clemens, not fucking Roger Clemens, Lance Armstrong successfully sued people. So that who said that he used steroids, he successfully sued them when he actually had been cheating. So guys will go to all kinds of crazy lengths, do and say all kinds of shit, even when they're guilty as sin. So St. Pierre could be guilty as hell and still want testing, and he may just know that he can beat the testing.
Right, absolutely. And I think with professional athletes at the highest level, is if you're super dominant, beating guys who are using, chances are you're using too. Like, you look at Clemens and Bonds, sorry, I know you hate that.
I'm wearing a Barry Bonds t-shirt.
Really?
And I have the Giants on TV.
Ah, that is sad, I'm sorry.
And I have Giants shorts on.
Wow, you are quite the fan. Anyway, Lance Armstrong, all these guys who have popped and were the best at the highest level against guys, lesser guys, who were also using, you know, your Manny Ramirez, your Palmeiro, whoever it might be, all doing stuff too. It's like, how can you be so much better and so dominant over the best athletes in the world who are also using? I just presume everybody's doing something, and that way it's an even playing field, even though that's not necessarily the case. I think that's the way you got to go, because more and more, even in MMA, John Jones, Anderson Silva, Brock, all these champions have been doing stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think in kind
and
of
GSP is the only one that's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's hard to rationalize.
Like Randy Couture was on TRT. He had, you know, a therapeutic use exemption. Didn't get talked about a lot, but he had it. Like they all did. And when you see the guys who I think have that same otherworldly talent who I don't think are using, I think of Dominic Cruz, and you see what happens to him. His body breaks down. Things don't work as well because, or maybe he's using a ton and that's why he's breaking out. But I don't think he is. I think that, you know, he pushes himself too hard. And frankly, it really makes Mighty Mouse look impressive because, setting aside the fact that, yes, he's small already, I don't see him as a steroid guy. And he's just.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, I wouldn't even be surprised if Cruz and Johnson pop. Like,
oh, I wouldn't
I'd be not surprised by anybody because it's like, are both of those guys so much better than everybody else and that good where DJ's going to win, like, you know, 9 straight title fights? Like, Anderson Silva proved that that's probably not possible by popping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and maybe I'm a skeptic and maybe it's negative, but to me, it's like, the guys aren't that much different. Like, DJ's that much better than number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5 for all these years in a row. And chances are some of those guys were doing stuff. I can't remember the Russian guy.
Ali Bagutinov.
Yeah, Bagutinov popped. I mean, there's flyweights who are doing stuff, obviously. I don't know. I don't know. And you would think with so much money on the line and with title fights meaning so much more, is he going to go in there 9 times in a row against guys he thinks is using and not do anything himself? Is that dumb on his part?
Yeah, no. If anybody that pops these days, unless it's – I mean, look, BJ Penn popped. It may have been for something completely innocuous, and I always thought BJ Penn would probably be the one guy I was very confident in. There's no way he's on something. But even right. he had something weird happen. Could be a fluke, right. But whatever. So yeah, anybody that pops, like, I'm not really surprised. The only people, the guys I have a problem with, I don't like, it's like when I see a guy and it seems like overnight, like, his body looks totally different and he becomes a much better fighter. Or when you see like a Vitor Belfort where he's clearly not on something and he sucks again, then I'm like, all right, you're really cheating the system. You're not just like playing the game like everyone else. But I say that all, but in the back of my mind, some part of me is like, there are going to be guys every once in a while who really are that much better than everybody else, drugs or no drugs. And I'm just thinking, like, you know, Babe Ruth. He was so much better than people in an era when I say that, and you know what? He may have had better cocaine or something like that. You know, he may have been on the PED of his day. We all laugh, he's a big fat guy, but fuck, I don't know. I'm sure old Babe Ruth didn't mind taking a bump of coke. That's for sure. So, who knows? I mean, maybe the whole world's littered with cheaters, and that means that actually nobody's a cheater, and they're all just psychos.
I just think at the highest level, again, there's just so much money on the line. It's like you win the title, you're going to get bonus points. You're a millionaire, and then you've got more money to spend on better drugs.
Maybe
it's
not
almost like but he's better off. Champ than he is as the number 5 contender. Clean. He's better off juicing his champ and as opposed to being a mid-level guy.
He's like the only flyweight that probably makes anything approaching decent money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what he makes. I could look it up, but he's always said he's happy with what he makes, so there you go. That's always smart when you're negotiating.
I wish I'd never gotten the sport at all.
We also have Rafael Dos Anjos versus Tarek Saffedin on June 17th at UFC Singapore. RDA has lost 2 straight at lightweight and has not won a fight since 2015. Saffedin is also coming off 2 losses. This is going to be RDA's first fight at 170. Is this a good fight for RDA? Is this a good way to get into the welterweight division?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if he wants to fight at 170... If you're the UFC, you can kind of sink or swim there. There's so much talent anyways. Saffedin is good. He's not great. He's not like he's one of your next top contenders right away. And frankly, if you know, Dos Anjos can't beat him, he's not going to beat any of the other guys. And it's kind of stylistic opponent that he could probably, you know, it's not like you're facing a guy who's winning because of his size. It's a guy winning with, you know, he's bigger, but he's more of a technique guy. So, yeah, it's a fair test for Dos Anjos, and if you're Saffedine, it's the biggest name you will have fought, so I guess it works.
Do you like RDA's chances at 170, or you think he's just too small?
My first instinct is to say he's too small, but we're seeing a lot more guys move around in divisions now. A lot of guys, especially championship-level guys, are moving up and down weight classes. Obviously, some are having more success than others. Henin Barão doesn't really seem to adapt well at 45, but he's competitive enough. So I think that RDA will do okay at 170. I don't think he's going to be a champion. He never has any kind of special skills like that, but he'll probably do better than I would have initially thought, but he'll plateau.
I just find it always interesting where a guy loses a couple fights in a row, then decides he wants to go up in weight and fight bigger, stronger dudes. It's just like there's a weird mentality there, and I think the idea is, you know what, I've been killing myself to make this weight. It's draining me too much. But there's a reason. There's weight classes, too. It's like if you could make that weight and you've been making it for years, does it really make sense to move up and fight tougher guys when you were losing at the lower weight? Like, it's a tough decision, and one I guess every fighter needs to decide on their own. But I always question that, trying to move up coming off a couple losses at a lower weight.
No, I understand what you're saying. I think the reason it might work more than you would think initially is I think a lot of these guys, one, they're healthier, so they're training better, and also they probably have like a little bit more of a I don't give a shit attitude. A little more relaxed, because like a lot of times when you compete and you're supposed to lose, you don't have that extra pressure, so you can just be like, whatever, I'm going to do whatever I want. And they might have some of that attitude. And I'm thinking, I keep thinking of Cerrone is the first guy that comes to mind. Like, he just seems to be a little looser, a little more free at 170, and I think his body feels out a little bit better. It could just be a little minor detail. That said, he did just get knocked out by a blown-up 155er, so fuck, I don't know. They're all just... I'm just going to watch fights. I don't know.
It's a crazy sport. On June 25th, there's UFC Fight Night in Oklahoma City. Last week, I believe, we talked about BJ Penn and Dennis Seaver. That's actually going to be the semi-main event. The main event is actually Michael Chiesa versus Kevin Lee. Would you put that fight ahead of BJ, or would you have BJ headline that show?
I would actually put that fight ahead of BJ.
Okay.
And my reasoning is it's not going to have any impact as far as how much money you make. People are going to come to see BJ Penn live, whether his name's first or second on the card. Right. Same watching on TV. So, but what you do gain is by putting them above BJ, the people that will tune in and watch the show, they will see, all right, we know BJ's a real big deal. He's the reason we're here. We're not stupid. But these guys must be pretty damn important if they're ahead of him on the card, especially in something, you know, like in fucking Oklahoma. So I think it's a way to give them a little bit of a bump. So I don't really mind. Plus, it could just be if you have to have one of those fights go five rounds, which one do you want it to be?
Right. No, I'm with you. I like that fight a lot. I think that's a fun fight, Chiesa and Lee.
Now that I remember who Kevin Lee is,
the Motown phenom. Come on,
he's a black guy. I gotta remember, he's the black one.
He's somebody that you might think is taking tainted supplements.
He does look very good in a swimsuit.
He does not pass the eye test, as they say.
He doesn't pass by my eyes, and he certainly tests my patient.
On Saturday night, we actually have two shows this weekend, both on Saturday. One is more significant than the other. We've got Bellator 176 from lovely Torino, Italy. This will be Bellator's second show from Torino.
Melbourne.
The main event has Rafael Carvalho versus Melvin Manhoff for the middleweight championship. Did you know this is a rematch?
I did, actually.
This fight was god-awful, the first one.
It was horrible, yeah.
And it also had a bad decision with Manhoff losing. Do you have any interest in seeing these guys fight against for the middleweight title? I mean, there's a title on the line, but Manhoff is so far past his prime, and Carvalho's generally pretty boring. The first fight sucked.
I do have interest.
How come?
Because I didn't realize it was coming. I don't care about the show.
Okay.
It's at like 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. It's a free show for me, and Melvin Manhoff will always be kind of one of those guys in my heart where I'm like, it doesn't matter, because he will always be the dude who is just, when he's on, he's scary as shit, and he can still kind of do that. And so I'm like, it's better than them running, you know, two anonymous bantamweights I don't know about.
I guess. It's just that first fight was so bad. Like, why run it back right away? There's, like, no demand for it.
They don't have any challengers or real divisions with depth. So, they got nothing. Until King Mo wants to go back down to 185 like he should.
See, he's never even fought at 185 ever, has he?
Yeah, he did. He was a Strikeforce champion. He fought at 185 in Strikeforce.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, but I think he won the title at 205.
Huh.
But I'm pretty damn sure.
Between kickboxing and MMA, how many times do you think Manhoff has been knocked out?
Oh, between the two of them?
Yeah.
I think he's almost 40 now, or he is 40. I'm going to go with 27 times.
No, only 10.
Oh, well, okay. I don't know that. I'm just like, he's just one of those dudes. I feel like he's just out there getting knocked out all the time.
Be chill.
He's from that era where they wouldn't. They'd be like, all right, whatever. You're gonna die. That's fine.
Yeah, he's old and probably shouldn't be fighting anymore. But that's just my take. Nothing really else on that card. It's a bunch of, I don't like to say scrubs because that's kind of disrespectful
Europeans.
To those European scrubs. I know what's her face. They're Paige VanZant's on the card, Anastasia Yankova. But other than that, really no names. I think there's also a kickboxing card after it that'll air on Spike as well. So it's one of those doubleheader MMA kickboxing deals. I don't think you need to rush out of your way to see it, though.
No. I mean, it's sad because they could do better with what they're doing there. And I thought this over the weekend when I was watching WrestleMania and all this shit. And it's in like Raw. And because Raw always has these great crowds after WrestleMania, and they sing and they do these chants and cheers and all this stuff. And the reason that happens is it's all because the English and the Irish come over. Because that's part of their culture. That's why in America we chant defense, defense, and that's the extent of it. And in England, you know, they break out into songs, and they have inventive and creative chants, and they come up with them all the time. They're just very good with that as a culture, and I think it adds so much energy and life to a product. And I thought, you know, I understand Bellator doing shows in the U.S. for the big, big shows, but otherwise, fuck it, dude, run in Europe, develop something there. Like, that's where you can get those real passionate, unique ECW type of audiences where they might just love this shit. I think, you know, every time the UFC's there, they had that show in Scotland, and it was, like, one of the greatest crowds ever, and the Irish crowds are great, and I say just Bellator, stay over in Europe. Become the Euro UFC.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the idea that UFC's kind of pulling out from the international expansion now, too, and keeping it more U.S.-based, I guess.
New York City-based.
That's right. John Jones' probation has ended, and he is expected to do, I should say expected in quotation marks, those air quotes I'm doing here right now. He's expected to do a presser on Friday in Buffalo before UFC 210. Do you expect to see a more mature, responsible John Jones, or old school, drunk driving, coke snorting John Jones?
I expect to see the I'm Really High John Jones from the Joe Rogan podcast.
Okay.
I don't know. It's John Jones. I'm surprised he made it this far. I can't believe he didn't get arrested again. Good for you, John. You hired a driver. This dude's a fuck up. He's going to screw up again. He will not make it through, I will say, 2018 without having another really dumb event happen to him. There's no way he makes it 18 months. It's just a fuck up. And it's great. And he's going to go out there and he's going to beat Daniel Cormier and, and Cormier will be always remember that a dude who was a complete screw up was just significantly better than you at life.
If you were, you know, the matchmaker, Dana White, whatever, would you give him the winner of Cormier and Rumble?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even think twice about it.
You were just saying he's guaranteed to screw up again.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Well, will he make it to July and make that fight? Or are you just going to gamble and say, fuck it, and if Jones can't fight, you put Jimmy Manuel in there instead?
Why don't you just have Anderson Silva on speed dial and you go with it?
Yeah, you could, I guess.
Who else is he going to fight?
I don't know.
I'm going to want to see him fight the best. I don't care if it's for the belt or not. Make it a non-title five-round fight just so you can be like, look, we're just doing this fight now. We know he's not going to, you know, be champion in 6 months for some weird reason, but we're going to go with it. He's the greatest fighter who ever lived, maybe ever, and for sure already at light heavyweight. He's not even 30. He's got like a decade to go before he's like Daniel Cormier's age. He's got a lot of time to screw up and still rebuild his career. That's right. What's crazy about him.
Yeah.
So he's going to screw up, and he probably will turn it around, and somewhere around 34, 35, he'll start like taking it seriously, have like one more push, and we're all going to look back at it and go, oh, because we're not used as fight fans. Like John Jones, even amongst all the steroid-using guys we said earlier, he's an anomaly. He's your once-in-a-generation athlete that you see in a lot of sports where, you know, like Ken Griffey Jr., he was so great, then he fell off, and he had some good times here and there and bounced around. We're not used to it in MMA because most of these guys just kind of go get beat up and then lose because the sport passed them by. But John Jones is a special piece of shit.
The way he stopped like Cormier's takedowns in the first Cormier fight, like I look back and I'm like, geez, because you look at Cormier throwing dudes around. I mean, obviously Hendo was smaller, but just the way like he picked up and slammed Barnett and he was throwing around Roy Nelson, like these big heavyweights who have like somewhat of a wrestling background. It's like, and Jones stopped all of them except that last one in the fifth where Cormier just wanted to get a takedown and for like this weird moral victory. That was what, granted Jones didn't finish him or anything. That was an impressive performance by John Jones.
I mean, everything John Jones is, especially the OSP fight, almost everything he's done is impressive. The dude he's such a fucking freak. Even when he has, like, boring fights, there's some degree of, like, I can't believe he's doing this. He's just fucking
so much better
with a jab for five rounds. It's just, he's something I've never seen before, and he's only getting better as far as skill goes.
It's like, hope. I mean, who knows what he's doing?
I don't know. When you see, like, that grappling match, granted, it's just pure grappling, but what he did to Dan Henderson, I mean, Dan, yes, he's old, but he's still a really good wrestler. And John Jones he was just fucking with him. Like, it was embarrassing. It's the way, like, a black belt rolls with a white belt. It was awful. And he just didn't care. And he's so good.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck me. If he had fought Henderson back in UFC 151, he would have just done that to him. It would have been way worse than almost anything. He's such a god in there.
Well, that's why. That's why the Cormier fight's even more impressive. Look at what Cormier did to Henderson.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know what I mean? And then,
him around
and then Cormier could do nothing with Jones. And Jones, like, he wrestled, like, in high school and junior college, wherever, in upper New York State, and he was good, but it wasn't like he was an Olympic-level amateur wrestler like Daniel Cormier, you know?
No. I mean, John Jones was a junior college national champion. He was, he had a full ride scholarship to Iowa State once he got his grades up because shocker, he was stupid. Then he knocked up his girlfriend and got into cage fighting to support her because that's what you do in life. She's pregnant. I'm going to do cage fighting to provide. And it worked. And she's still just his girlfriend because oops. But I don't know. Guys, he would have, I imagine if he had been clean or at least just dedicated himself to wrestling, he probably would have won a gold medal. I think he's that fucking naturally gifted at grappling. For all the fuck-ups, it's a pleasure to get to see somebody like this.
The other thing that's amazing is just that family in general. They've got, like, two all-pro, like,
oh yeah,
NFL players. Like, there's three brothers. One is the greatest MMA fighter ever. One's, like, this nasty defensive end for the Ravens. The other guy, Chandler Jones, granted, he's a bit of a screw-up too, but...
He's like Pro Bowl caliber.
Yeah. He's a Pro Bowl linebacker. Yeah. It's just... The whole family is crazy. Like, you would think one of them would suck. Like, one of the Mannings sucks.
Yeah, one of them does suck. It's John Jones. He's the weak link on that chain.
He's the best fighter ever.
Yeah. Look, Brock said it best. Some men are just born better. That family's got the genetics. Like, whether it was bred into them by slavery or whatever it is, that family's just freaky. And my family isn't.
John Jones' daughters are going to be like the Williams sisters of MMA.
Oh, fuck. Nah. Well, no.
Skips a generation?
They won't, because they won't have a father around to drive them towards shit.
Maybe not. Sometimes it just happens by accident. So this weekend, the major show of the weekend is UFC 210. That's also on Saturday at the KeyBank Center in Buffalo, New York. In the main event, we have a rematch of Daniel Cormier versus Anthony Rumble Johnson. Cormier won the first fight by rear naked choke after getting dropped in the first round by Rumble. Since then, Rumble has won three straight by knockout. You've got Jimmy Manuwa, Ryan Bader, and Glover Teixeira. Three legit dudes in the light heavyweight division. Granted, you know, they're probably just outside the top five normally, although I know Manuwa was in it now, and so is Teixeira. But impressive wins, especially how he did it, all by knockout, all convincing, no question, no doubt in any of those fights. Cormier, on the other hand, has won three in a row as well. He has the decision win over Gustafson and Anderson Silva, along with the Johnson fight. So each guy's riding a winning streak. Both guys are legit, you know, number two and number three in the division if you put John Jones at number one. So a big fight, the two best active light heavyweights in the world. Betting odds are kind of interesting on this, I noticed. DC is actually the underdog going into the fight, and Rumble's a slight favorite. Would you agree with that? Do you see Rumble as the favorite?
No, I think Rumble's the underdog.
So we should bet on Cormier?
I would. I mean, if you put a gun to my head, yeah, I would.
Are you telling me I should bet on Cormier? I don't have much money, but
do I have a gun to your head?
I don't think so. That would be really weird if you did.
Yeah, you don't know. So you might want to just take my advice and go bet on him, because I got a gun there. You can't see it, but it's there.
I actually like Rumble in this fight. The Cormier fight with Anderson Silva was kind of telling to me. I felt like Cormier had, I don't know if it was because it was Anderson Silva and the style and the last-minute change or whatever, but I didn't feel like Cormier looked that good in that fight at all. I felt like he uses wrestling against Anderson Silva, a guy who hadn't trained at all, is 40 years old, normally fights at middleweight, and he wasn't really throwing Anderson around. He got these basic takedowns and kind of just, I want to say, laid on top of him, but didn't really advance position or anything. Maybe that's because of Anderson's ground game and he stymied Cormier, but you would have felt like Cormier could have got on top of him with that Olympic wrestling, just beat the hell out of Anderson Silva. Like, Chael Sonnen did more damage against Anderson when Anderson was better and younger. And I don't know if Cormier's lost it to step. He's in his late 30s now, and at some point that's going to happen, and Rumble's just been on a tear. I could see Rumble hitting him with another shot like he did in the first fight, but actually finishing it this time.
Oh, I that could easily happen. I mean, Rumble Johnson, I want to see him win because I want to see how John Jones handles that power.
Me too.
Because I know what the Cormier fight's going to be. Right. And Rumble Johnson may be one of the top two or three most pure power punchers in MMA history. I mean, it's just insane what he can do to people. He really just touches people and they're done. Like, there's no question about when, you know, Daniel Cormier punches somebody, you're not thinking, oh, is that going to be the one that knocks him out? Or you might be thinking, could this be? Whereas with the Rumble, it's like, that's the one. Like, when he throws a punch, you know, if that lands, you're dead. So it's so awesome. And he's got that power, which is undeniable. But I still think when I'm looking at this fight, the guy more likely to win is Cormier because he did it before and he's got that ability to wrestle. You know, and we've never really seen Rumble truly put it together at the highest level possible. I mean, he's kind of a guy that fades, definitely doesn't do well with adversity, and Cormier, if nothing else, is mentally tough. But I don't know. I'm really, really looking forward to the fight because no matter what happens, the fight against John Jones is going to be good and fun.
The thing with Rumble, too, is a lot of people don't talk about it, but he is on a run where he has gone 12-1 with his one loss to Cormier. And in that loss to Cormier, he almost had him. Like, he was, like, one more shot, it would have been over. He knocked Cormier down, and he was staggered and stumbling around. And for whatever reason, Rumble couldn't land that one more good shot. So it's not like that first fight was a blowout for Cormier. Some people are making it that. And in the second round, he dominated. Johnson gassed like you would think he would. And Cormier beat him with the wrestling and got the rear naked choke. But there's just something about Cormier and that last Anderson Silva fight and even the Gustafson fight where it went five rounds and was really close. And Gustafson's no joke, but Rumble destroyed him, you know? I just feel like this could be one of those fights where Cormier gets old all of a sudden. It happens.
Oh, I mean, it very well could. I mean, Cormier, he's taken a lot of punishment in his fights, and he's fought at the highest level guys, basically, and he's just old after being an athlete since he's probably been a legitimate, you know, identifiable athlete for over 30 years now. Eventually, that's just got to break you down.
Yeah. What do you think of fan, like, apathy towards him in general? Because even though I don't favor him in this fight, if you look at it objectively, which no one in the world can seem to do with anything anymore, but
I can.
Cormier is the second best light heavyweight ever and was probably, if Cain Velasquez is not around, going to win the heavyweight championship too. He's the real deal, a legit fighter, and, you know, if John Jones didn't exist, people would be talking about him as the greatest fighter ever.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys that, you know, it just seems to, and it is tragic in that respect, but I've seen this happen enough times that I don't think it's all that tragic just because that's what makes somebody like John Jones really that much of a legend. And you see, like, you know, Rich Franklin had that problem with Anderson Silva, and Nogueira with Fyodor. You know, just there always seems to be these guys who are really great and can beat everybody, but there's just that one dude. You just happen to be in that weird era. And, you know, think of all the guys at welterweight that probably would have had, you know, multiple title defenses, like John Fitch, except for just George St. Pierre happened to exist. So, you know, it sucks for Cormier, but look, we're just going to be – I guess he's used to coming in not first. That's kind of the story of his career.
Yeah, but I was more thinking, like, he tends to get booed a little bit.
Oh, you think he's a turd.
Okay.
He's a dork. That's what he is. He's a dork.
Is that reason to boo somebody? Like,
yeah.
If he beats Rumble and goes on to fight John Jones again – Jones, I feel like, is going to get more cheers, and Jones is clearly the dickhead out of the two of them.
He's not. John Jones is what everybody wants to be. He's the jock that people resent. Nobody sits there and in their fantasy, like, what do you fantasize about? I want to be a really nice guy that everybody likes, and I come home, and I'm doing these things. Or is your fantasy, like, yes, and it's a fantasy because you know what, you would never actually do it, but some part of you has that desire to be John Jones. Yeah, I do a lot of cocaine, smoke a lot of weed. I drive my car around drunk. I do whatever the fuck I want. I'm banging women left and right. I got all these kids, and I can still go in there and just beat this shit out of people using nothing but my unfair God-given abilities. Like, that's a cool guy. He's a dick. You wouldn't want to be friends with him in the real world or anything. But you're not watching the real world. You're watching fighting. You're watching a three-hour television program, and one guy is presented as boring, own guy isn't. It's like, you know, it's like watching, you know, your dad fight Mick Jagger. Like, you're going to want to see Mick Jagger win because he's fucking Mick Jagger. Even though, who do you want there to be your dad when you're growing up? Your dad, not Mick Jagger.
In the semi-main event, we've got Chris Weidman versus Gegard Mousasi. Big fight for the middleweight division. A lot hinges on this for both guys. Weidman's coming off two straight losses. He had the Luke Rockhold fight and then the Yoel Romero fight. Two bad losses for him. He was undefeated up to that point. He had the Anderson Silva wins, the Machida win. He killed Belfort. Then he had that Rockhold fight and Romero. So if he loses another one, I don't want to say he's done, but it's going to be a long road back for him to get a title shot, unless it's like a last-minute replacement sort of thing.
He's going to get the job done. It's an Armenian motherfucker.
Well, Mousasi at the same point is probably on the biggest tear of his career. He has won four in a row, and is actually 6-1 in his last seven, with wins over Dan Henderson, Kostas Philippou, Vitor, Uriah Hall. Granted, it's not the elite guys, but this is really his first shot at an elite guy in a long time. So he seems to be on the rise while Weidman seems to be on the decline. You're picking Weidman, though?
Well, I mean, I'm always going to pick against an Armenian to start. But, yeah, I mean, Weidman, look, he could lose this fight and still be a great fighter. Anybody, you know, shit happens in MMA, as we all know. But as a general rule, like, if Weidman loses this fight by what I would say, like, a non-fluky, convincing manner, then he's done. Because he should beat Gegard Mousasi. And Mousasi's a very good fighter. There's no shame in losing to him. But Chris Weidman was at the elite of the elite level. And when you're that good, you should beat somebody like Gegard Mousasi. And I think that Weidman's still there. You know, when he fought Yoel Romero, he looked okay. He looked fine, actually, for a while. And with Luke Rockhold, he was beating Rockhold for that fight until he, you know, fucked up and got caught in a bad position and got the shit beat out of him. But I still think this is a dude who's got a fucking great wrestling, really good jiu-jitsu, and he comports himself very well on the feet. And Mousasi made his name, even when he's in the UFC now, it's the same shit as always. What'd he do over in Japan and Pride and all that shit? He's just beating guys that weren't really that good, and he rung up a bunch of wins in a row, and now he's got a winning streak here in the UFC, and you just listed them off. They're good fighters. Like, there's nothing wrong with them, but this ain't exactly, you know, Anderson Silva, Lyoto Machida, and, you know, one after another type of deal. Like, he's beating the clear B-level fighters, and I haven't seen any evidence that he's, you know, at that highest level. You know, Jacare took him out. So, fuck you, Armenia. I don't care.
You just went on a long time for somebody who doesn't care.
I talk a lot. We know this.
Despite not caring?
I can talk about anything. I don't care.
That should have been the name of this show. Then underneath, we've got kind of an odd fight here. Cynthia Calvillo versus Pearl Gonzalez is the next fight on the main card.
Yep, Cynthia Calvillo. She's got potential.
She came out off that short notice win. It was only like a month or two ago. It was recent. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a strawweight fight. Obviously, she has some potential. Pearl Gonzalez does not have a Wikipedia page at this moment. But she is, I'm going to go to some other site to find this, is 6-1. She's 30 years old. Really no-name wins on her record. A lot of smaller promotions. So, yeah, that's a fight, third from the top at UFC 210.
Yeah, I mean, I liked Cynthia when she made her debut. I thought she looked good. I thought she showed a lot of promise. I'm pretty sure we went over that and both said that show. This is a really big push, like way higher up in the card than you would expect. I understand that chick fights do well. I don't know if either one of them is from New York or anything. I'm pretty sure Cynthia is Hispanic. I think she's from, I want to say, someplace nice and warm.
San Jose.
I was going to go with New Mexico, which is not San Jose, but close enough.
Yeah, she trains out a Team Alpha Male now.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess they got something they must really like her because, I don't know, she should be at UFC 211.
Should they make, like, another team called Team Alpha Female?
No, because Ben Page Van Zandt will want to lead it.
She's training with, like, Sonnen or something in Oregon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's going to go well.
That's really weird. Anyway, underneath that, we've got a welterweight fight. Thiago Alves, who, you know, missed weight at UFC 205 badly, moving back up to welterweight to face Patrick Cote, who actually got a title shot at 185. Two guys who have been around forever, more wins than losses. Any feelings on that one?
I saw Patrick Cote fight Anderson Silva here in Chicago.
Cote was doing pretty well in that fight until his knee blew out.
Things still sucked. That was like the beginning of when Anderson Silva had, if you include those 2.5 rounds and the subsequent 10, when he had 12.5 rounds of utter shit. He's just in this weird dickhead phase. I like this fight. I don't think it's fair to say that Alves returned to welterweight. He fought at welterweight last time. He wasn't even close to lightweight. They're both strikers who come out and they match up well. Cote is tough to have a bad fight with if you want to strike, and Alves is not the kind of striker who gets impatient or I should say too patient and tries to pick his spots. Like, if you come at him, he'll throw down. So this will probably be pretty good, even though Patrick Cote bores the shit out of me for some reason. He just seems like a muck. Like he's like the welterweight version of Dan Kelly.
It's interesting because, I mean, both of these guys actually had title shots. Alves versus GSP and then Cote at 185 against Anderson. But Alves in particular hasn't been real active the last couple of years. I don't know if it's injuries or what. He's only 33, so you would think he'd still have a couple more good years, but he didn't fight at all in 2013. He fought once in 14, twice in 15, and once in 16.
He had that brain thing.
I forget what that was.
There was something, I remember he was going to fight like in New Jersey or something, and they had like some, like an MRI or something that came up on his head and his, like.
That's right.
He had like a spot on his CT scan and they didn't know what to do, and then he had to get it fixed. And, you know, when he had a spot show up in his brain, he said, fuck, I'm just going to go for it. It's just my brain.
What are the chances that gets punched in that one spot?
I mean, Dan Hardy with his Wolf Parkinson's syndrome or whatever he's got. Like, I can understand, like, you're like, look, I have a heart attack, fine, they'll revive me. But it's your brain, dude. Like, you don't get to replace that one.
Not yet, anyway.
Although his name is Pitbull, and he looks like an idiot, so he's probably not using it anyways.
He's going to be able to shoot stem cells in there at some point, just fix it. The opener on the main card, we've got Will Brooks versus Charles Oliveira. Kind of a fun fight. Oliveira has had issues making weight at 145, so it looks like he's moving up to 155. I don't know if that's a long-term plan for him or what he's thinking, but he's kind of bounced around in weight because he was just too big for 145, I guess. He's coming off, he's 1-3 in his last four. He's lost to Holloway, Pettis, and Ricardo Lamas. Two of those were by guillotine choke, of all things, which for somebody who's known for his ground game is kind of weird, don't you think?
He makes the dumbest fucking mistakes on the ground. Like, he's so, like, he's very good with his offensive submissions, but his submission defense is, he's such an airhead. He just makes it, he's just so stupid, the things he gets caught in. It's amazing. The dude is super talented, and this fight should be really good. I mean, Will Brooks is an athletic dude. I know I said it. And he likes to, he generally goes out there, and the way that Oliveira fights, he just is going to blitz you on the feet standing. He gets in the clinch, he's going to throw something. If you get on the ground, you know, the guy will throw up triangles and open plot all day long. And if he doesn't, then he'll be gassed and you can beat him up. So This could be the best fight of the night.
Yeah, Brooks is coming off that Alex Oliveira fight, you know, the Brazilian cowboy guy. But if you remember that fight, Oliveira missed weight. He weighed in at 161.5. And then, like, he knocked Brooks out, and then I forget if he crotch-chopped him, but he basically flicked him off and told him to F off after the fight. And Brooks kind of got screwed in that fight a little bit. Granted, he didn't have to accept the fight with Oliveira missing weight and everything, but he chose to and then got his ass kicked kind of in the third round. So it'd be good for Brooks if he could get back in the win column here, because he came in from Bellator with a lot of hype and looked like, you know, he was maybe a couple fights away from a title shot. Now he's kind of starting from scratch, and if he loses this fight, it's he might never get a main event push in UFC.
No, I mean, he's lucky if he doesn't get cut after he loses this fight. Because I don't know if he's won a fight in the UFC.
He's not. He's 0-1. He only had that Cowboy Oliveira fight so far.
Okay, was he scheduled to fight somebody else? I feel like he's supposed to fight Eddie Alvarez at one point. I don't know why. But
maybe at Bellator.
Maybe. But, you know, again, if he loses here, that'd be 0-2. And if they want to cut dead weight. I was going to say separate the wheat from the chaff. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, he did the company a solid last time. He took the fight and didn't have it canceled, but I don't remember him doing them a solid. He's 0-1. He lost to Cowboy Oliveira. I'm going to be like, okay, yeah, and if he loses here, I'm going to be like, oh, he's 0-2. Maybe he's not very good.
So, I was mistaken. He beat Ross Pearson by decision, but
okay,
does that count as anything?
Gives him a little. I don't think he's all that good.
Yeah. Brooks, you mean, isn't all that good?
I don't think Brooks is all that good, and I don't think that Oliveira will ever be considered very good because of his mental handicap. You know, I said it, and I didn't even mean the way it came out, because I actually did mean, like, you know, he's handicapped by his mentality, but I'll just go with he's a retard. That'll work.
In the main event of the FS1 portion of the card, we've got Miles Jury versus Mike De La Torre. Jury had a lot of hype a couple years back. He was this young guy. He was 15-0 overall and had, I want to say, like 6 or 7 wins in a row in the UFC until he fought Donald Cerrone. If you remember that fight, that was the fight where Cerrone was just kicking him literally in the ass at the end of the fight because Cerrone was so pissed because, like, Jury wouldn't engage, really. Jury was lying on his back, just like, and Cerrone was wailing on him with, like, kicks you never see that hard.
Like,
in that
soccer kicks to the teeth.
It was like nothing you ever see because Cerrone was just pissed because Cerrone. And then he lost a fight to Charles Oliveira, of all people, where Charles Oliveira missed weight. So Jury was 15-0. He had wins over Diego Sanchez, Gomi, Mike Ricci, Ramzi Nijem, Michael Johnson. Like, decent fighters. And he looked like he was this up-and-coming dude, and now he's lost 2 fights. He didn't fight at all in 2016. And now he's coming back, you know, 4 months into 2017. He's been off for 18 months. Kind of a weird career for him in that regard. You would think he'd want to try and get back sooner and get some wins under his belt. No idea what he's been doing the last 18 months or what his reasoning is for not fighting, but now he's back fighting a guy nobody's really ever heard of in De La Torre.
Yeah, it's Miles, it's so weird when you went over Jury's history, because, like, in my brain I'm like, Miles Jury's really good. Then I'm like, but he hasn't been around forever. Like, he's just sucked lately. He's just been losing. I forgot. Then when you say he's been off for so long, plus those losses, it's like, huh. Like, it's been, what, 4 or 5 years, or maybe 3 or 4 years since we've actually seen him win a fight. And yet I hear the name Miles Jury. I'm like, no, he has some really good wins. And, you read him off. Diego Sanchez, Michael Johnson, I mean, those are really good wins, especially Johnson. That's a top 5 lightweight that he beat. So he's got the talent. I'm glad he's back, I guess. I'm guessing he's probably hurt.
I can't find anything about an injury.
I'm going to say he blew out his knee then. That timing sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean, he's 28 now. He's just hitting the prime of his career. I mean, it's bizarre. It's a weird one because it was one of those guys where you're like, like he's going to be a name and he's going to do something. And then, you know, that Cerrone fight, it's been, you know, another loss after that and no fights in a year and a half.
Interesting. I've never seen Miles Jury and Dominic Cruz in the same room at the same time. And they were both out for so long at the same time. Funny how these things work there, hey, Miles Jury.
Like, they're the same person, or they're dating, on a secluded island together?
I was going with, like, a Superman-Clark Kent thing, but if you want to go with a Superman-Batman thing, that works, too.
Okay. on the undercard on FS1, there's not a whole heck of a lot of name value there. Patrick Cummins versus Jan Błachowicz is on there, but, again, a lot of guys you've never heard of. The one fight you may want to keep an eye out for, there's a guy opening the fight pass prelims. He's a flyweight, Magomed Bibolatov. He was actually World Series of Fighting's first flyweight champion, and then he left the company and just started fighting in, like, Russia again. And he's undefeated and looks like he could be something at flyweight, but who the hell knows?
I'm glad that, like, that's how, like, you do things if you're Russian or Dagestani or whatever. You're like, I'm in World Series of Fighting. I'm just done. I'm just going to go back to Russia and fight. Ah, fuck you. I don't care. I don't care about your contract.
I mean, he came into WSOF and had never had a fight, and they gave him an immediate title shot. He won the title and is 13-0 overall. I think he's from Chechnya or something, one of those countries where you wrestle bears as a kid. So in that regard, he's probably kind of a scary dude at 125, but it's somebody to look out for. It was just a name that I'm like, I recognize that name. I recognize that Chechen name.
Probably. I don't know if he'll lose on Saturday, but Mighty Mouse, look, he tooled Bagutinov, a dude who's on EPO. So, I mean, holy shit. Like, again, if Mighty Mouse is clean, that dude's a freak. Although I do predict that he fights in July. That's also my prediction.
Okay, after he beats Wilson Hayes.
Yeah, I call that he beats Wilson Hayes, and then he fights in July on the International Fight Week show, so they can have the history of him going to set the all-time consecutive defense title record.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Who's he going to fight?
I have no idea on that part. Maybe Sergio Pettis, if he gets a win.
That would be good. That would make sense.
So, yeah, I'll go Sergio Pettis. And that'd be a really good semi-main event for that show. And I think it'd be the first time people would be interested in Mighty Mouse. Like, that might be the fight that could be his tipping point as far as a draw is concerned. He might start doing upwards of 250 or 300,000 buys.
All right. Any other thoughts on UFC 210? What will it do for a buy rate?
$400.
You think that high? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I just pulling a number out of my ass, kind of. But there hasn't been like a UFC in a while, and I'm bored. And I know my brother, when I told him about the fight, like, he's like, he really wanted to see this one. Like, he really was interested in it. So. Yeah. 437,000 buys.
I was thinking more like 325, but we shall see. We'll
see. Depends on the weather.
that is true. One show that probably wasn't affected by weather, although it could have been, it was in Orlando, was WrestleMania this past Sunday. I think the weather was pretty good down there. Did you watch WrestleMania?
You know I did.
Did you watch all 7 hours of it?
You know I did.
Did you regret it?
No, not really.
Ah, okay. So I knew 2 out of 3.
It was a long show.
It was so, so long. We talked about it a little bit last week. It's like I used to watch a lot of pro wrestling. Like, I was trading tapes when I was like 15, 16 years old for like All Japan, Kenta Kobashi shit. Like, back in 94, 95, like, I was into wrestling big time. It's like in the last, you know, 10 years, I've gradually lost more and more interest. I watched WrestleMania last year. I watched WrestleMania this year. But it's like, I've never watched an NXT show in my life. I know what's kind of going on just from reading and listening to podcasts and stuff. But I'll always watch WrestleMania just because it's a tradition. And I just felt like this show went on and on and on. And by the end of it, I was literally falling asleep. I had a cup of coffee, and I was trying so hard to stay awake for that Undertaker-Roman Reigns match where I was like, this is crazy, crazy long, and not enjoyable at this point at all.
Well, I do admit I was aided passing the time, so I was enjoying myself. But what? I was doing drugs. I got to make that real clear right now.
Was it
really
like,
creepy otherwise?
Yeah, I pictured some...
I don't know what the hell there's going on there.
Sex dungeon or something. But,
What?
I just don't get who wants to sit down at 5 o'clock, watch a pre-show, then watch that till midnight. Like, I don't understand it. Like, I feel that way about UFC shows too. Like, I'm okay watching 11, 12 fights in a row, but let's cut out the filler. Let's not do it on FS1 till 1 a.m. And let's keep it moving, keep it entertaining, because it's just hard to sit through it, even if you want to.
No, I mean, people thinking it was long, it was long. Like, at the end, like when Brock faced off with Bill Goldberg, I thought that was it. I thought the show was over. I was like, huh, I feel like something's missing. I don't know, whatever, must not be important.
Yeah, the six-pack challenge for the WWE SmackDown Women's Championship.
Well, what's funny is that I remember that match hadn't happened, but I'm like, well, they're getting kind of long, because in my world, like, the pay-per-view usually ends at, like, 10 o'clock, and so I'm like, well, maybe they just didn't time it right, and, like, some music act thing went too long, and the girls got bumped. That sucks for them. And then, like, they come out, I'm like, well, they're not going on last. What the fuck's going... And I'm like, what the hell's left? And like, oh, Undertaker and Roman Reigns. Oh, okay. And I know why they did it now in hindsight. You know, that's Undertaker's last match ever. Fine, he gets to go out in WrestleMania main event. Otherwise, it dropped the ball because Brock and Goldberg was awesome. It's just Brock being a boss. But, I mean, I know the show is long for people. I think it's because I don't watch wrestling pay-per-views regularly that it was fine. And it's also, like, I watched NXT the previous night, and I watched that. It's kind of like the one weekend, and I had nothing to do. It was a Sunday. There was nothing on TV. So it worked out well just kind of watch it. But, yeah, I mean, that last hour... I mean, I didn't even know it was supposed to exist, and it just, oh, okay, whatever. Like, I'm waiting for this to be over because I'm tired. Like, I turned it off as soon as, like, Undertaker lost. I didn't watch him put his hat down in the ring and shit. I saw that next day on Facebook. I'm like, yeah, I didn't miss anything. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what this – probably the show will be remembered for, like, Undertaker's last match, if it is. Like, they didn't even, like, promote it as – Why not make it like some career, like career versus career? Or did Undertaker decide that day, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore? Or is he going to come back and we're all just presuming he's done? Who the hell knows? But obviously that's probably going to be the highlight. The other things on the card was John Cena and Nikki Bella getting engaged. Like, come on. Like, what the hell?
John Cena's so awesome. He's a robot. He's fucking prostituting his next marriage for ratings and television purposes.
It was a little
awesome.
Sad. It was a little sad.
He's so dedicated to the company.
Mm. Well, and I saw something. His net worth is like $55 million or something. So
I do it then.
Yeah, I guess it's been worth it. I mean, he's making more than most professional athletes at this point. Then we also had the Hardy Boys debuting without like the gimmick that people want them to have, which is a weird situation with TNA and then suing the, like, claiming copyright.
I have no clue what any of that stuff is. I know they say delete, and I saw, like, some wrestling match they had in, I think, their backyard, but, like, not in a backyard ring, and, like out in the hills, and, like, there was a motorcycle jump. I don't know what the hell is going on.
See, here's the thing that's weird about me. I watched some of that stuff because it was different. You know, it wasn't your typical Monday Night Raw 10-15 minute promo match where a guy bumps outside the ring and they cut to commercial. It's like, I'm at a point where I'm like, here comes the commercial. Like, it's just so routine. At least the stuff the Hardys were doing in TNA was different. Like, I'm not saying it would draw or make money or be successful on a huge way. But at least it was different, and I could laugh at it. Like, I would watch that stuff where they're – I think the team they were fighting was called, like, the Decay or something. They're dressed up like clowns or like some crap, but what? They're like shooting fireworks at each other in their backyard, and
yeah,
got like a drone that like wrestles too or some shit.
They met the babies involved.
They're doing a gimmick where they throw the baby, but it's clearly a doll. Like they're just doing like stupid shit like you or I would do in our backyard wrestling company. You know what I mean? And it, yeah. Like to me, it was kind of fun. It was different, and I could laugh at it. Just a regular WWE product. There's nothing funny about it. There's nothing entertaining about it at this point. But what got them back to WWE and got them kind of like this second career resurgence was this gimmick. And now they can't even use it in WWE. And like Matt Hardy's going on Twitter claiming it's because of the crowd's reaction to him coming out that he's been able to push aside the dark side of his persona, and now he's just going to be regular old Matt Hardy. It's like,
awesome.
Like I don't need to see the 40-year-old Hardy boys. I want to see these freaks with the baby and the Mexican gardener and the wife and the drone flying around. That's what I want to see, and now they're not even going to do it.
You know what? I just... Because I've only seen some of that stuff, but I have seen, like, his gardener and his kid and everything. It's so
they're digging
weird.
Graves in the backyard. Like,
you know what?
They're drowning people in, like, a pool, and then they've got, like, this old shitty rowboat, but the rowboat's called the Dilapidated Boat. Like, he's got, like, gimmicks for all the stuff. They were at, like, a petting zoo, and Jeff Hardy was wrestling a kangaroo. Like, it's so dumb, but it's so funny because it's so different, and, like, they don't give a shit. They're, like, looking at, like, these little... I don't even know what kind of monkeys they are, but there's a bunch of monkeys in the cage, and they're calling them spot monkeys and naming them after all the X-Division wrestlers. Like, they're just doing, like, funny insider stuff that is different, which wrestling's needed the last decade, something different. I don't know.
You know what would be really fun? And here's the thing. If I'm WWE, I haven't come out as regular Hardy Boys for Mania and Raw. Just get that cheap, easy, nostalgic pop, and then I immediately... There's only one person in the world that Matt Hardy, I guess Jeff along with him, should feud with. And it would be perfect. Bray Wyatt. They could do so much weird shit with Bray Wyatt's flaming crosses and maggot-filled rings and Matt Hardy, like, deleting him and having his gardener go and attack a sheep or something. It could be amazing.
It would be good. I would watch that. Because at least it's something. What else did we have? Rob Gronkowski interfered in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. He's had a weird, like, relationship with Mojo Rawley. No, but I don't know why they're friendly or whatever, but there was a show, I want to say, like, not this past December, but the December prior, like, 2015. Gronk was, like, front row and, like, high-fiving Mojo Rawley. Like, and they've done some, like, internet videos together. I don't know what the connection is. Maybe they played football together, like, way back when.
I'm sure.
I don't know. It's just odd. It's just a weird relationship because WWE often has a hard time getting – and you don't want to call Gronk a legit celebrity, but he's one of the more famous
players
in the NFL.
Yeah, but if there's any dude in the NFL that's going to be friends with pro wrestlers, it's Gronkowski.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, you know, especially in Big Mojo Rawley, like, he's just a frat boy. We're getting hyped, and they're doing these shit. And they probably, like, you know, these two idiots met, like, at the Combine and, like, did their 40-yard dash and went out and, like, crushed beers together. And then they're like, dude, what are you bros for life? Yeah, man. Bros for life. And then that was it. That was them married to each other. And one of them is one of the most freakish athletes in the world, and the other one is Mojo Rawley.
The show closed with Reigns and Undertaker. We talked about that, but if it is Undertaker's last match, any thoughts on his career in general? Is he this legendary guy? Because I want to say I question that. Obviously, he's got a ton of longevity in the company. He debuted in 89 or 90, whatever it was, as The Undertaker. And he's the guy who kind of reinvented himself in the Attitude Era. He had that American Badass gimmick, and then he went back to Undertaker. And he's kept his career going, even though he only wrestles once or twice a year. But I kind of grew up on The Undertaker to a degree, and when I got smartened up a little bit about wrestling... like, this guy sucks. These matches are boring. He's fighting King Kong Bundy and Kama and Kamala and Yokozuna. It's like, these matches suck. Like, they were boring and they blew. And he kind of developed this rep of being this good worker later on in his career when it's like the streak is going and he's wrestling Michaels and Mick Foley and all these guys who I don't want to say carried him, but made him look a lot better than he might have been as far as a worker goes. And as far as the gimmick goes, he didn't really have to talk much or do anything. He just had to be big and work off of Paul Bearer. I'm not saying he's not a legend. He is, but I don't consider him a Flair, a Hogan, a Michaels, that sort of guy at all.
I don't know where he is. I grew up with him, same as you. I think I'm a little younger than you, like a year or two. For me, like, it's tough to look at his career objectively, especially like the older stuff, because like that stuff was so much fun for me as a kid. Like, the idea of a casket match was just the coolest thing in the world. Like, even now, like, I think back to my begging my parents, like, pleading with them, can I please get this? It's going to be the Royal Rumble, please, it's a casket match. No, Dad, this is serious. Like, it was so important. Like, it was so, like, and everything he did was neat. And, like, I went to the very first thing that ever happened in the United Center was SummerSlam 94, and that was Undertaker versus Undertaker.
So bad.
It's bad in hindsight, but as I'm a kid, I'm like, oh, there's two of them? And I can remember, like, the summer. Yeah, that was that summer. The Undertaker was missing, and, like, I'd be watching Superstars.
Leslie Nielsen was looking for him.
Yeah, and I was looking for him. Like, we'd be driving around, like, I wonder if I'm gonna see this thing driving around. This is going to be really cool. I can't wait. I never saw it. But I don't know. Like, he was just always so just fascinating for that reason. So, like, I didn't know if his matches were good or not, and I knew I liked the way the Tombstone looked.
Only I was a couple years younger.
I mean, yeah, there's pictures of me dressed up like The Undertaker holding my brother up in a tombstone. My parents took the picture. I don't think they would have taken it if they knew what a tombstone was, because my mother would have been like, are you kidding me? No, don't do that. Put your brother down. But, I mean, he's been a chameleon. He's been, I mean, think about how successful that gimmick is.
Absolutely.
That spawned him and Kane. Like, yeah. Very few gimmicks have ever actually had their own successful spinoff. Like, TV shows can't do that, and Undertaker did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so stupid, but people just, like, it's like this one ultra suspension of disbelief thing that wrestling fans have just been, like, through it all. No matter, you can have Steve Austin, he's just drinking and beating people up, and this guy's real, and that guy's real, and everything's getting more and more real. And then there's just, yeah, that's his half-brother that murdered his parents in a fire. And we just go with it. It's like, yeah, sometimes he has a mask on, sometimes he doesn't. It depends on his mood. So, yeah. No, really, it depends on his mood, if he wears a mask or not. It fits. He used to be burned from head to toe, but not anymore. And Undertaker may have burned him also. We're not really sure. And also, his father may have been named Paul Bearer as an Undertaker.
Any other thoughts on Mania in general?
I like it as a spectacle, and I thought that the crowd in Orlando was incredible, because it was an outdoor show, and usually those shows suck for atmosphere, but I felt like everything got really good reactions. Like, they're a little smarter crowd. Maybe they mic'd it better, but I really felt like I got more response out of the people in those matches.
I'm going to step away for 1 minute. What you're going to do while I'm gone, I'm going to be quick, is we need to know how your fantasy baseball draft went and who you're picking to be in the World Series this year. Baseball season just started up.
Fucking Jews, man. They're running everything.
Be right back.
He's gone. Yeah, I'm going to rant about the Jews. His fucking kid is not going to sleep because little kids are bastards and they're useless. Nobody likes them. And so now he's passing off the fantasy baseball stuff to me now because he doesn't want to talk about it. My fantasy draft was outstanding. I was giddy with how great it went. I drafted against the presets. I drafted against the other players. I recognized who was on auto draft. It was planning my picks around the number of potential auto draft picks that would get taken. Like, Manny Machado was almost going to be my number one overall pick, but I was number six. Trey Turner fell to me, and he's got that dual eligibility, outfield and second base, and his numbers at second base, he could be a 320, 30 home run, 40 steal guy. He's that kind of upside. So I took him first overall, and then I just watched, and people weren't taking third baseman / shortstops, and I picked up Manny Machado in the eighth round and slide him in at short. And I was prepared to take him one or two overall, like at short, because he has short eligibility for me. And then I took Beltre and Longoria as my third baseman. Really, Beltre, because I'm a huge Beltre fan. And for the first time in years, I actually loaded up on pitching. Like, I usually don't have strong pitching, but, I mean, I've got Strasburg. I've got Cueto. I've got Iwakuma, whatever. I got Syndergaard. I picked up Matt Harvey real late. It was a hell of a draft. And, I mean, let's go back to the Jews now. They have horns on their head. I can hear them. And that's why they wear a yarmulke. They control all the money in the world. They're just running roughshod over us.
Sound like Borat.
The supply is completely... Oh, you're back.
You knew I was so back.
No, I didn't.
I heard you say it. Okay. So who's going to be in the World Series?
Oh, I didn't even get that part. I was just going over my fantasy draft. And
did that go well? Do you feel good about your team?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to the World Series this year.
Congrats.
So in baseball, I would my Giants are always going to be right there. The Cubs are a sexy pick. I would say Giants or Cubs. And I actually mean the Giants for real. Like, they got a hell of a fucking team here. And in the American League, I'm not sold on the Indians, really. I think they're going to come back down to earth. The Astros have pitching issues. Rangers might be I don't want to say wild card in the playoffs, but they could surprise people, especially Darvish, if he's healthy the whole year. We'll see how Price comes back from his injury. If Price comes back healthy, it's really the Red Sox to lose, especially the AL. They're so fucking good. So I would go, my official pick would be the Giants versus the Red Sox, actually.
Okay, that would be interesting. As far as, I know you're also into soccer, right?
Yes.
What's the deal with this American kid? He plays in Germany or something?
Christian Pulisic.
Is he the real deal or is it all hype?
He's the real deal. He's the one guy, like, American soccer has been waiting for decades. Like, we've been waiting for that one guy where you can say, he's really, really good, and you don't have to add foreign American. Like, if he was Brazilian, people would be like, holy shit, he just turned 18, like, within the past year. But, like, he's within the past 6 months, I think. He's playing in the number two team in Germany. He's holding his own. He's starting for the team. He's playing at the highest levels. He's scoring goals and assists. Again, he's only 18. Like, he's really young. And most guys who turn out to be great are very good at 18. And for him to be this good, and when he's on the field for the men's team here in America, what he did against Honduras and the other game, it was just for an 18-year-old to go out there and take control like he does. He looked like a 30-year-old man, not physically necessarily, but his attitude and the way he was directing people. Like, he's already comfortable enough to be telling experienced vets, guys who've been on the men's team for a decade, no, move over here, shift here. Like, he's pointing and directing it. He's, you know, yes, any 18-year-old can flame out, but he'd be, like, one of the super prospects for literally any country on the planet, with the exception of maybe Brazil. But even Brazil would be like, oh, we got a good one here.
The United States is a country of 330 million people now. Why do you think there's never been a superstar soccer player from this country that's, like, been able to dominate on the international scene? I mean, granted, soccer's, you know, whatever, the fifth or sixth biggest sport in the country, however you want to rank them, if hockey's ahead of it, whatever. You would have thought somebody would have cropped up in the last 20, 30 years, no?
It's, I think it's mostly the way that we develop with the sport. Like, America has what they call the pay-to-play system, which is common in, you know, every other sport. You know, if you sign your kid up for baseball, you got to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Europe, it's the same with soccer, but Europe doesn't have a pay-for-play. In Europe, the academies are all, they're developing kids. They have youth academies for 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and high schoolers. Like, these clubs are investing in these kids much in the same way that you know, we would kind of like invest in minor leaguers or something like that. So really, you know, even if we have a guy that's got a lot of talent, we don't have the infrastructure in place to develop that talent. We don't have the coaches. We don't have the encouragement. And, you know, iron sharpens iron. Mm-hmm. We don't have the other guys for him to do well with. Like Pulisic, he actually trained over in England for, I think, about 2 years because he had to get to work in there. And everybody's saying right now, you know, the best place for him at 18 is not just in Europe. It's actually in Germany with Borussia Dortmund, the team he's with. It's a really good club. It's known for developing its youngsters, so it's a perfect fit for him. But, you know, we've had there's other really good young players. Morris came out of Stanford. He's only 20. And he had options. He probably could have gone to England and played, but instead he signed with the Seattle Sounders. He got a good, you know, several million dollars. He got good money, but everybody pretty much immediately said, "Oh, he's stunting his development." He's going to be good. Everybody's fine with him. He's going to be a contributing player in the national team, but he's getting about as good as he's going to be. Whereas Pulisic, because he's, you know, he's playing the best in the world, and it's really special to watch him play. Like anybody would be a fan of this kid.
Do you think this could be the start of something bigger for U.S. soccer? I mean, if he catches on, is it going to lead to another generation of kids being more into soccer? Is he the first of a new wave of talented players coming up? I mean, part of the issue for, I think, U.S. soccer is that if they were more competitive on, you know, that higher level, the World Cup, that sort of thing, more people would be into it maybe. You know, if they won a World Cup, maybe we would get, you know, football or soccer fever in the States.
Whether he crosses over is really tough to say. I mean, charisma is charisma. Whether somebody connects, I don't know. There's also going to be the issue of he does play in Germany, and while the games are, you can watch them here in America, they're going to be on earlier in the day, on, you know, Saturday mornings is when most of the games are on. So it's not as easy. You know, when something's not in your country, not near you, it's tough to really get into it. If the men's team wins a World Cup, this country will be, it'll be one of the biggest events really in the country's history. Because, I mean, the women are doing very good ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the women. I mean, no offense to the women, but, and I actually prefer watching women's soccer if I can. I think it's a better game. But women in any sport, when the men do it, it's going to feel like a way more of an accomplishment. And it will be more of an accomplishment because it's not going to happen anytime soon. Like, they're not going to luck into a World Cup in 2018. They're not going to luck into a World Cup in 2022. Maybe 26 is our best option to realistically possibly win it. I mean, there's just so many levels, and you just don't have flukes. Flukes do not win the World Cups.
Right. And I think part of it, too, is even if you look at local sports teams, when the team sucks, less people go, less people are interested. When the team's good, people talk about it. The tickets are harder to come by. They have sellouts, and people want to see him. And I think that might be part of the issue with the U.S. men's team is they've just never been that good.
Yeah. Also, America, for despite what everybody thinks, is very divorced politically from our sports. Like, we've never really had a national team identity for anything. And granted, in the rest of the world, it's usually their soccer team, but we've never had that where we're like, that's the men's team that plays the rest of the world in a sport. Because the only real team sport we ever played the world in was basketball. And we were using our, you know, our second string scrubs from college and dominating everyone. So it wasn't really that honor. Whereas, you know, in every other country, if you're selected for the men's national team, I mean, these guys are essentially playing for free, and yet they're all dying to make that team. It's such an honor. And America's just never given a shit. We don't give a shit about international sports. Like, we don't exercise our political differences on the sporting field. We bomb people, but we don't, you know, play sports against them.
There are five cities. They are New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Philly, in your hometown of Chicago that can now sign up for YouTube TV. Are you familiar with this service?
No.
Just came out today. YouTube TV follows in the footsteps of other so-called skinny bundles that let you watch live TV from a phone, tablet, web browser, or set-top box without a cable box or subscription. Hulu will be launching its own live TV product later this year. So basically, you don't have to have Comcast anymore. You can get YouTube TV instead and watch a lot of networks. Turner properties like TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network, and CNN aren't available yet, but YouTube's trying to get them to come on board. So basically, a lot of these streaming services are trying to move in and replace your traditional cable networks, which people have talked about for years happening. Like, is TV, traditional television, going to die? And you're going to be able to maybe pick and choose your stations, or there's just going to be other content providers because you don't need the traditional cable anymore. You can just stream this stuff anywhere. Does that interest you? Do you think this will just burn out, or is this sort of thing the future?
Well, I have the MLB channel on my Apple TV streaming right now, so that kind of answers me. I mean, it's obviously this stuff's going to become more and more prevalent. I think it's a great thing for everybody involved, except for the consumer wins in the end on this one, because you have, you know, between Hulu and Netflix and this thing, and I know PlayStation's got their version, and there's, you know, all kinds of these guys. We're getting so many options, and it kind of sucks if you don't have them all in one place, but if you want that, you just get cable. To me, I use them interchangeably. I'll take so much stuff off my DVR, and I just put it on my tablet and watch it on the train or something like that. For a while, I thought, you know, eventually we're just going to replace it all. But there is something to being able to just sit down, you just turn the TV on, and you don't have to think about what you're watching, and that's the one thing that the on-demand services just can't offer. I can't. If I sit down, I'll watch
this.
Netflix
isn't really. This sort of thing isn't on-demand, though. This is like the next level. This YouTube Live thing.
Yeah.
Subscribers will get access right now to about 40 channels: ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, ESPN, FX, USA, Bravo, Disney, AMC, and BBC America. They're all going to be available soon too. And the service also includes an unlimited cloud DVR so that you can record your programs to watch at a later date. It's live TV. This is like an alternative to Comcast. This is TV. And I mean, if you plug in, you know, whatever into your TV, or it's a smart TV already, you just cancel your Comcast thing and sign up for this YouTube thing. And I think it's like $35 a month or something. Like, I don't want to say it's dirt cheap because you don't get all the channels yet, but it could be. I mean, it could be the wave of the future. And I personally like it just because I feel like a lot of these cable companies are just so huge. Like, around here, it's like you can get Comcast, or you can get like DirecTV and get the dish and put that thing on your roof and try and angle it so you get the right signal. Those are really our only two options here. So to have a third choice like that will be nice.
It is kind of funny. We live in a world, and I understand what you say when you're like, you know, Comcast and DirecTV, they're so big. Thank goodness for Google.
Right. Yeah. No shit.
I mean,
yeah,
the biggest company of them
but
all.
I like the idea of competition. I'm not that liberal.
I like it too. It's one of those things where I'm so, and I know that I'm out of touch with a lot of these things because like every time I visit Tony, like his kids don't really watch a lot of TV at all. Mm. What they do is they watch stuff on demand.
Right.
And it's the same generation of kids that watch people play video games. I don't understand that at all, but obviously Twitch is a huge deal. So, the ease that people pick up on demand, maybe they won't care about watching something mindlessly the way I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that, these things like YouTube TV and all that are a bridge, essentially, because, again, I watch TV live, but it's exclusively basically sports, or pretty much just sports. Maybe cable news here and there, but any real show I care about, I never watch live. I always wait 5-10 minutes, let the commercials build up so I can skip them. So live TV, you know, it's not dead. It's just everything's changing. And people will change with it because they have to. They don't have an option. There's literally no choice. It's going to happen.
I'm with you. The world's 50 best restaurants were named today. Did you know this?
No.
Yeah, it happens every year. Anyway, the first time ever an American restaurant won the award, with 11 Madison Park in New York City getting the win. It's never happened.
Suck a dick, Paris.
Yeah, usually it's France or Spain. One of those two countries usually takes it. Although there was a restaurant, Nomo. I think it was in.
I've heard of Nomo.
I think it no Noma Nomo.
No, no booze.
No booze different. No booze different. But anyway, there was also one restaurant in Chicago, and I think we might have talked about this place. Alinea took the 21st spot. So out of the, you know, million restaurants in the world, it was ranked number 21 in the world. Does this make you any more interested in going there and being forced the food they want to feed you?
Oh, is that one of those places?
Yeah, all these places are like that. That's the thing. There's a whole world of that where, you know, you trust, you know, the chef or whatever, the crew, the team they have to give you good food, and you pay for it. Part of it's more like the experience and the weird food and the presentation.
It's all the experience. Well, bullshit. It's,
okay. All right. You don't buy it. That's okay. A lot of people don't. Like, there's the majority of people don't buy into it, and I'm okay with that.
I understand why it'd be fun. I understand why it would be fun. I think it could be. I don't think that the 21st greatest restaurant in the world, you know, that to me feels like, you know, you get into the gimmickry where, like, that's to me like kind of like the art critic, you know, the movie critic that just. I'm not saying you have to all be Transformers, but not everything's like the black and white silent film from Hungary. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yes, it's really special. I will say that knowing that the 21st best restaurant in the world is here, it does make me more likely to try it if I could afford it or get a table, which I don't think either one of those is happening anytime soon.
A lot of those, the chef there, his name's Grant Achatz, and he's an interesting dude. He actually wrote a autobiography. He probably didn't actually write it, but you know what I'm saying. Crazy story. He actually got like tongue cancer, like mouth cancer, and was afraid he was going to lose his tongue and not be able to taste food anymore. And he's like this acclaimed chef where he might not be able to essentially do his job. Like, that's a giant, huge portion of his job every day, is tasting all the food that's going out and making sure it's how it's supposed to be. So he's an interesting guy, and he's opened up several other restaurants around Chicago. But they also innovated in another way that'll probably piss you off, in that they actually sell tickets to the restaurant instead of reservations. And if you bought like a ticket for like 5 o'clock on a Monday night, it's cheaper than if you bought a ticket at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night. And it was really the first restaurant really in the world that ever went to this ticketing system, and more fine dining places that are in super high demand, like 11 Madison Park and, these top-rated restaurants in the world have gone to this ticket system because they're guaranteed the money. What would happen a lot is they would be spending, you know, a few hundred bucks ahead per person, and then a party of four doesn't show up, and they're only feeding, you know, 80, 100 people a night. It was a huge loss for them. Now it doesn't matter if there's no shows, and they get their money either way. So it was a really innovative thing that's kind of caught on in the ultra fine dining scene.
I like that a
lot. It's pretty cool.
Like, I would like that for almost any restaurant, but especially for something like that where, like, I'd be like, okay, I want to go there. I better get there 3 hours early. Like, if I know that I'm for sure going to eat there at 5 o'clock on a Tuesday because it's like something special and unique, I'd be like, all right, I'm cool with that. I would much rather know for sure exactly what time I eat, as opposed to maybe I get a good time to eat on a better night. Like, again, these are places you don't go to all the time.
Right.
If it was McDonald's, you'd be like, this is kind of annoying. I don't want to call ahead for reservation to Olive Garden. Actually, I would do that. But, you know, something like this, it's like, to me, this would be like going to a concert. Like, yeah, you don't always go out on a Tuesday night, but if the Rolling Stones are playing, you're like, fine, this would be my one Tuesday of the year that I do it. So I could see that. Yeah, I kind of like that a lot. Plus, if you want to, like, make your travel plans.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of these places are, like, once-in-a-lifetime meals. You do it once in your life, see what it was like, and be like, wow, that was really cool, I did that. Or, and that was probably a waste of money. I'd rather have my, you know, $800 back for But a lot of them do, like, this tasting menu where it's, like, 15, 20 courses, and they're smaller courses. But it's all weird shit. Like there's liquid nitrogen, and shit's on fire, and they ping, like, the dessert on the table for you, like, there, and stuff starts as a liquid, then it turns into a solid, like, weird, like, molecular gastronomy is what they call it. But part of it's the show. Like, the food tastes good, obviously, and it's cooked properly, but part of it's the show and the entertainment, and it's the night out. You don't go there and then go to a show. The show is the dinner. But, again, it's a small niche Donald Trump billionaire sort of meal that they would go to, or celebrities would get in, and you would probably do it once in your life, and so would I. But
it'd be high society type.
Yeah, not us.
I can be high society.
You could be. You are going to Yale in a couple. When is that? In a month? Couple months?
June 3rd through the 20th or so.
And what will you be doing at Yale?
First of all, it doesn't matter what you do when you're at Yale. And unless I'm being a janitor, even then you'd be smart. I saw Goodwill Hunting. I know it's not Yale. I don't know what school it is.
Harvard.
Was it Harvard? I thought it maybe was just like unnamed super smart East Coast school. I'm going to be part of the Yale Writers Conference.
It's for 2 weeks.
A little over 2 weeks.
So what kind of conference goes 2 weeks? I don't mean that as like trolling.
No. It's, they call it the Writers' Conference. It's more like a
workshop.
It's basically sort of thing? Yeah. It's a workshop / class kind of deal. Like you get one on ones with real professors and things like that. But it's, I didn't really know. I just applied. I was like, it was fucking Yale. I wasn't going to get into Yale. Like, I didn't really.
What do you think? Not many people apply, huh?
apparently, because, like, I don't know. It's weird. Like, there's all these, after I got accepted, I'm like, I better, like, read this program and see what I'm going to be doing here. I'm kind of in the dark. And they're like, you know, advice for first time students for this thing, blah, blah, blah. It's like, in many of these workshops, there are many well-known and acclaimed published authors, but don't feel intimidated by that. There's many others who are just starting out. And I'm like, hold on a second. What the fuck am I going to here? What do you mean there's published authors of note? Like, what? Are you guys sure I should be in this? Like, I just took some shit from Half Guarded and tweaked it a little bit and submitted it along with $40. And now I'm going to Yale. Like, are you guys really sure that you got the right person? Did my essay get mixed up with some, like, Asian chick from Taiwan who's, like, writing in three different languages? Something seems really off. Like, none of this makes any sense to me. And now I have to have submit your manuscript by May 15th so that it could be disseminated to the class. I'm like, hold on, I need a manuscript? I have a website.
Is this like a certain type of writing? Is it like fiction, nonfiction, journalism? Like,
The program has a fiction and a nonfiction portion. I'm actually going to be in the nonfiction portion, and I don't know what I'm doing.
Are you writing something specifically for it, and they like look it over and help you rework it, or you don't know?
They just said they need a manuscript, and I know it's like a nonfiction with an emphasis on like memoirs and things like that. I'm like, I guess I'm writing a memoir.
Oh, God.
So like, I'm trying to like tie some things, some stories I got, and make it into something. But like half of like it's like this weird manic style, and it tells a story at times. It tells allegories. I directly address the reader. Half the time I'm talking like, all right, look, kid, I know you're doing a book report. Just write, this is what the theme is. I don't care. Write it down. Fuck you. It's a good idea. And then, like, I have, like 5 words. I go, I'm just putting this in as a real quick chapter. It's like 5 or 6 words, guys. Just go ahead and read it. Skip to the next chapter. But this way you can tell your teacher you read 3 chapters of the book. Like, I have, like, this eye towards appealing to those that, to the unenthusiastic teenage reader. That's my audience. Like, I make reference. I'm like, I really hope that one day this becomes, like, the next The Catcher in the Rye. Something that's got some swear words and it's really short so all the kids read it in high school. That's my goal, is to be the book that you're forced to read in high school. Look, just tell your teacher it was good. Just, really, just fine. Here, write this down. You can copy it. I'm not going to call you a plagiarist. It's fine. Go for it. And that, like, there's a lot of rantings in, like, that. I don't know. Like, I got about 22,000 words for this thing already, which is about half. That's about 115 pages in a real book. So I don't know. I'm just going to hand it in. If it's good, it's good. If it's not good, I don't really care. I still get to say I studied at Yale. I win no matter
like, are you,
what.
How do you thing. In class all day, like Monday through Friday? Do you know?
The first part of the program, you're in class, I believe, every other day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then you do Tuesday and Thursday, and then maybe one more session. And those, I guess, are like half of each of those days is like you're one-on-one with just the professor going over and critiquing and getting notes. And I don't really know. I'm just going to show up and, like, poke people and be like, ooh, you're real. Ooh, it's a real build. Like, my only real goal right now is to carve my name into a desk at a library. Like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. This is stupid. Like, I'm going to try to steal a book from the library or something. I don't know. I got to get all the keepsakes I can because this shit ain't going to last after this. I'm not going to, like, Oxford next summer or something. Maybe I am. I don't know.
Hey, if you're the only one that applies, maybe. Do you stay there, like, in dorms? Or where do you stay if you're in... Because it's New Haven, Connecticut, right?
Yeah, it's at New Haven, Connecticut.
Just outside of Stanford, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's about 30 minutes away by train or something. Because I was looking up flights and everything. Yeah, you could stay in a dorm or you don't have to. I'm looking at
it. Probably is like the dorm part of the cost or?
It's an extra. Okay. So the initial fee is what it is. And then if you want to add the dorm, it's like another $1,000. Or I looked at like an Airbnb area.
Yeah.
And I priced that out and it'd be about $500 for the same amount of time. I'm going to see where my finances are. I'm not gonna lie. I just want to say I stayed in a Yale dorm. Now I'd just always be like, oh yes. Oh, when I studied at Yale, yeah, I stayed in a McKellen dorm. Yep, for sure. Oh, third floor, absolutely. We have a ping pong table now. Yeah. You know it,
George
yeah.
Bush Hall.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm gonna stay. Oh my gosh, if I could stay in the same bedroom, the dorm that George Bush did, how awesome would that be? And I'm gonna rush every single frat.
Okay.
On one night, I'm just going to run around to each frat, knock on the door and be like, hey, can I join? No? Okay, bye. And then I can, like, later on be like, oh, you remember Sigma Chi? I rushed with them, but I didn't get in. They're very exclusive. And I'm going to cram, like, 4 years of dumb shit you do in college that I should have done the first time and do it in like, 2.5 weeks there.
You know? With no one else there, because obviously this is like a summer session sort of thing. Classes are out.
Yeah. Hopefully there's somebody there. I'm going to go streaking one night. I'm just going to do it just to say, yeah, I streaked at Yale. And if I get arrested, so be it. That's totally worth getting arrested for. I'm going to have to carry my carry my ID with me. You don't want to know where. So, yeah, it's going to be an adventure.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. There are, and in other good news, there are lighthouses in Connecticut.
I know. I'm finding a lot of stuff. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do with, like,
on the weekends and stuff. Time. Yeah, so you would fly out and probably have to rent a car or something.
My thinking right now is to fly to New York and then then take a train in.
Okay,
and then just live on the campus. I'm not renting a car. I don't think I can.
Not going to find a lighthouse.
Okay. I'm gonna, if I go there, I'm gonna have to. Maybe I would rent a car or take a bus.
There's some cool stuff around in Connecticut. I know we were talking about it, but there's a bunch of lighthouses. There's like a lot of like naval museums and that sort of stuff.
I might have to rent a car. That does sound. I'm really excited about living in the Northeast
for 2 weeks in a dorm.
I know, but it's like in this idyllic like set off part of the world, but like it's like I'm being transported back in time. Like when I'm like looking, like I was just like screwing around, like looking at famous people that graduated from Yale, and like yeah. I know it's really smart. It's like, oh yeah, that president and that president and that president and that president. I'm like, holy shit. The president of the United States went there. They ain't fucking around there. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then there's me.
Hey, not every school's perfect.
Yeah, well, you know. There was a guy in the 50s that went there that murdered a bunch of people. So I'm ahead of him.
Yeah.
So he got a degree.
If you can find it like a cheap little, I don't even know, like Corolla, is that the smallest car you can get? But, Mystic Connecticut School. It's a ways away. Yeah. It's closer to like Rhode Island, but
that's cool.
A pretty cool town. Well,
then I could say I went to Rhode Island.
Small state. If you're going to go to Rhode Island, you might as well come to Massachusetts. Rhode Island, like you drive to Rhode Island in like 45 minutes.
If I do rent a car, I'm just going to like fucking drive around for like 5 hours and hit like 13 states. Just knock them off my list, baby. Yep. Been to Vermont, been to New Hampshire. Been to Massachusetts, been to Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Maine, and I think that's all of them.
Wait, have you been out? You've been to New York? I know that New York City.
I've been in New York.
No, New England states at all.
No, never.
Okay,
it's weird.
Not really. I mean, why would you come out here?
I don't know.
Just for the hell of it. I mean.
A lot of people live there, and there's stuff to see. I've been to California. Why would they go there?
I don't know. I feel like I feel like California takes up most of the like West Coast. I feel like you'd go to see the Pacific Ocean or something. If you've been to New York, you've seen the Atlantic. You know.
Yeah, I mean, when you go to California, like it's nice and sunny, and like you go to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go to New York, like nobody thinks like I'm going to go to New York City and then go swim in the ocean. Like, you can do it, but, like, it's not your destination when you go to New York.
True. I don't think Connecticut's really known for their beaches, but there's probably a few nice ones.
Isn't that where Martha's Vineyard is?
Oh, fuck.
Where's Martha's
Vineyard? Massachusetts. It's right off the Cape. Like, you can see it from the Cape.
Oh, yeah.
Nantucket, too.
Oh, yeah.
Nantucket, too.
This is the same fucking state.
There's actually, I guess, Rhode Island's in between them, but I guess we border.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, technically, we border both, but if you were driving,
Connecticut's on the right.
Isn't it? Usually people say east and west, but
I'm looking at a map in my head right now. It came out as the right.
Yeah, it's below Massachusetts on the map, but Rhode Island and Connecticut are both south of Massachusetts. Rhode Island's borders us though, on the I guess it would be the east. In Connecticut.
When I looked at a map, it looked like if I had like a good boat, you could get from like Long Island to Connecticut, and it would be like a 15 minutes across a harbor.
They're pretty close. They're not that close, but they're pretty close.
That's weird. A lot of states there. That's all I got. A lot of states there. Good way to end it.
There's at least 50 of them. All right. On that note, we'll close it out. Are you legitimately trying to raise money to get there?
No, that's legitimate. Yeah,
that's a real concern. Like, if you don't raise that money, are you fucked, or what's the deal?
No, I'm not fucked. It's just gonna be really tough.
Do you feel weird asking people for money that way? Doesn't seem like your style.
Yeah. It's very odd. It's very weird. but I can make enough of a joke out of it that I don't feel totally awkward about it. And I feel like a lot of people look and be like, "Look, Mike, you're such a fuck up. Fine, here's $5."
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. I won't even ask, but great. I think that's good. I think hopefully you'll get something out of it, and I'm glad you're excited about it.
Yeah, I'm really happy.
Is it? Really oftentimes you're not that happy, so this is a good turn of events.
This is like the greatest validation of my entire life.
I wouldn't put that much stock into getting into a class, but
what the fuck else have I done in my life?
Well, you went through law school. I mean, that's fairly
important. Yale is better than law.
I know, but it's a summer course. It's not like you got accepted to Yale Law. No offense.
I could not.
But I'm just saying, I think it's more impressive getting your JD and passing the bar than taking a 2-week course somewhere.
Yeah, but this is really smart people saying you're one of us.
Okay, fair enough. All right. I don't think anyone ever questioned your smartness.
Oh, yes, they should have.
All right. Well, it's good to know that. Anyway, on that note, we should probably close this out. We went very long. Next week, we'll probably talk UFC 210 results. Maybe Melvin Manhoff will have a better showing, and God only knows what John Jones will say on Friday. So we will talk to you next week. Thanks for listening to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. Talk to you soon.
I'm finished.
Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Coughlin for HalfGuarded.com. If anybody's actually listening to this part, I'll be surprised. But I realized, as a practicing attorney, I should probably mention somewhere, like they do in the movies, the motion pictures, that everything you've heard is exclusive copyright and trademark and every other legal designation permitted within the United States or any other grid country. HalfGuarded.com owns everything you just heard. Nobody else does. If they stole it from us, I will find you, and I will kill you, because I have a special set of skills. Also, anybody that's listening to this, email mike@halfguarded.com. I've never really used email, but I can get shit from it. If you've actually heard this, I'm not kidding, I will send you $5 via PayPal. I'm really curious to see if anybody in the world will ever fucking hear this. $5 for somebody. I'll probably do it for everybody that listens, unless it gets out of control, and then I'll just delete this part. But until that time comes, everything you heard is property of the HalfGuarded.com website. Bye. Oh, and yes, I'm aware that putting in a copyright thing at the end of a podcast where I've probably stolen music from somebody else is weird, but I promise to pay those artists if they ever request it. HalfGuarded.com. Go!